Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is July 30th, I think. I didn't make a note of that tonight, did I? Nope, I didn't. Okay, it's July 30th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Let me repeat that, 605-475-3250. And our access code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on our top right-hand side. And just to make a note, we're going to be having a new, what would we call them, business partner put up there. I was hoping to have it up before tonight's meeting, but just didn't happen. But we're going to be doing something with Melaleuca, if anybody's familiar with that company. It's an excellent company. I don't know that you could buy any products that, you know, home products, cleaning products, soaps, shampoos, conditioners, vitamins, things of that, all kinds of things of that nature. But they're all health vitamins, all made to do something for your health. I don't know that there's any product out there that beats it. But anyway, I used to buy Melaleuca years ago, and so I'm getting back into it. There is a multi-level marketing program with that if anybody wanted to get involved in that. But I'm in it for the product, and of course, we will have that set up for multi-level marketing, so if anybody purchases, they'll be helping us out here because the revenues will go to National Liberty Alliance. We signed up under National Liberty Alliance. So anyway, I just wanted to make a note of that, and hopefully next week we'll be able to announce the fact that we have it going and what page it's on. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be in John chapter 3. We're going to pick up where we left off, John chapter 3. We're going to pick up in verse 22, and in 22... we're going to be reading to, 36, which will be the end of the chapter, about 15 verses. Okay, John chapter 3, verse 22. After these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea, and there he tarried with them and baptized. And John also was baptized in Aenon near to Salim, because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized. For John was not yet cast into prison. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, he that was with thee beyond Jordan, and to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same baptizeth, and all men come to him. John answered and said, A man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him. He that hath the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy therefore is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. He that cometh from above is above all. He that is of the earth is earthly, and speaketh of earth. He that cometh from heaven is above all. And what he hath seen and heard, that he testifieth, and no man receiveth his testimony. He that hath received his testimony hath set to his seal that God is true. For he whom God hath sent speaketh the words of God, for God giveth not the Spirit by measure unto him. The Father loveth the Son, and hath given all things unto his hand. He that believeth on the Son have everlasting life. He that believeth not on the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abideth upon him. That was John chapter 3, verses 22 through 36. And next Monday we'll pick up on chapter 4, Gospel of John. Okay. Couple of things. We are going forward to sue the judiciary now. We have collected enough money to do so. We were looking to collect $5,000. We've collected about $9,000. As a matter of fact, we had one individual who gave us $5,000, and we're very thankful to that person. I haven't had a chance yet to write a thank you note to that person, but I will be getting that out hopefully tomorrow. So I'm very appreciative that that really, really pumped us up. So we have $4,000 extra, more than what we needed. And maybe $5,000. We'll have some money out of that, too, left over. You know, I don't really see that we're going to necessarily exhaust all that, but that's a nice, comfortable buffer zone for doing what we're going to do. And what we'd like to do, though, I'm moving that $4,000 over, and we're going to continue this drive, or whatever you want to call it. I'm going to be begging on a daily basis, or a weekly basis, shall I say, for money. So we can pursue the sheriff's program. Now, the sheriff's program is this, and people share, and we'll be sending out an email concerning this. The sheriff's program, we wrote a booklet. A while back, we wrote a booklet as a pocket handbook for jurors and sheriffs and bailiffs and judges, anybody. And we've taken that handbook and really worked hard on that and designed it around the sheriff. But we've got a lot more pages. It's probably three times the thickness or three times the amount of paper is going to be in this new handbook. Now, the handbook is available in PDF form for free. Anybody can go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, and on the front page you'll find it for free. And you can download it. We also set up a site, powerofthecountysheriff.com, I believe it is. If that's incorrect, Jan, maybe you can make a correction on that, but I'm pretty sure it's been a while since I looked at that site. But I believe it's powerofthecountysheriff.com. And what we want to do is drive as many sheriffs as we can up to that site. These booklets will help to do that for a higher education. We're going to connect, we may have already done this, if not, we will be doing this, is connecting them over to our National Liberty Alliance site for signing up into any of the free courses that we have. And of course, the sheriffs will make sure they have free access to the other course that's coming up that we need to really start pushing on. But we've been pretty busy. Our focus of writing is on three things. We're writing, first of all, the case now that we're going to be going in to sue the judiciary, which we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But we're writing on that. And what we're writing in that will also be part of the course because, you know, these subjects, you know, we're all pretty much dealing with the problems, and we're going to deal with this with suing the judiciary. So in the process of writing this case, it'll also assist in writing also the course and also the book. We're writing a book, and the book will be the most in-depth, of course, and it's going to have a tremendous amount of information. The course, of course, will have quite a bit of information, and it'll teach people how to access into the courts and do various things, understand the Constitution in a high degree level, and the Bill of Rights, of course, and the Declaration of Independence, and what common law is, and the law of the land. It's going to be an in-depth course, and again, you know, working on the case, working on the book, and working on the course really is all together. So whatever writing is being done, it's being done for all three purposes. So, but again, we are working hard, or at least I am working hard, to write up this stuff and get it going. In any event, I'm kind of hoping to be able to say that we'll file the case in about 2 weeks. I think we'd be able to do that. Depends on how much I get pulled away from what, you know, what we're doing here, if I can stay focused. I don't take many calls because I don't have time. I'm always too busy. But I do take calls from time to time. I may not take any calls at all for the next 2 weeks until I get this done, with the exception of the leadership of National Liberty Alliance. I get a lot of email, and I just can't answer email. I constantly make note of the fact people have questions. They need to come here to nationallibertyalliance.org. They need to come to our Monday night program. I'm here 3 hours a week, every Monday night. People can ask any question they want. And we'll answer them to the best of our ability, even on what we're doing and how we're doing and how we're spending money, anything. We're here, and we'll answer it. So if anybody has any questions, please don't email me and try to get. I haven't got time to answer email. I get so much email, I miss a lot. Okay, and I've created numerous different emails so that I can get different kind of emails in different places. But even that becomes, you know, kind of mixed up as time goes on, because people find this email or that email and they try to get me information. But I just don't have the time to answer emails. So please, you know, Monday Night Program is for this sole purpose. You can always send your question to the Monday Night Program. And even if you're not here, you know, you can then download the program and listen to the answer. So anybody that sends a question before the Monday Night Program, they will be asked on the Monday Night Program. So, again, people can listen in and download the MP3 if they can't be here live. Okay, so we're going to go forward and we're going to sue the judiciary, and we're suing for true liberty. I mean, this is the timing can't be any better. I mean, we are right on time. I can't believe on what's going on with between Trump and the deep state. There's a civil war going on, U.S. intelligence is assuring the people that we are going to take these people down, and we've got the upper hand. I don't know if people have heard about a few months back when a missile took off. It was mentioned in the news. Everybody was wondering who fired the missile, blah, 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 blah. No answers came, and it was the deep state who fired the missile. I'm not sure where they fired it to go to, but it was intercepted by the U.S. military, and so there is a serious war going on, trying to take out Trump any way they can. We've been assured that he's well insulated, so it's doubtful they'll be able to get to him that way. They've tried to take out his family. We've heard different stories on that, and I believe that probably most of what we're hearing is true on that. But in any event, the work that he's doing up on the top is sort of he's pushing down, and we're going to be pushing up. And so right now, our job really is to focus in on the judiciary. We need to get it onto the record, the problems and the subversion taking place. And it's going to be a very unique process that we're going to be going through. We're going to be suing, like I said, the entire judiciary, which is all 94 federal district courts, every judge in there. We're going to give them the ultimatum, ultimately. Any judge that starts to conform and obey the Constitution and doesn't resist us, well, all be well. Any judge that tries to resist us, any magistrate who tries to resist us, we then will bring them up for an indictment. The lawsuit will be by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury against the judiciary. But the judiciary is not the only ones we're going to sue. We have to sue all the people involved. We were debating on whether we were going to sue the United States Supreme Court on that. But the conclusion came, we have to sue them. Reason being is they're responsible for the rules. The rules are a major problem. It prevents us from having the law of the land given to the people. It's civil law, which is statutory law. And the United States Supreme Court was responsible for the organizing and the writing and the blessing of that particular document, which is a seriously defunct document. And we're going to lay that out. So we have to sue them. We don't have a choice. And again, any resistance, you know, well, then they're going to have to deal with the wrath of the people. We're expecting them to comply and obey. I've been listening to a lot of things that Trump has been saying, looking back at some of the things he said in the past, looking at the inaugural address and what he said there, and in a few other various places, and when he spoke to the UN, what he had to say there. There's no doubt in my mind that his intention is to give the power back to the people, And we will be copying him of everything we do. And we're going to be copying him in the form of an information. So he'll see exactly and understand. It'll be an education, too. And I know he knows already that we're trying to take the federal court system back, and thereby all the judiciaries, all the state courts, bring them back under the law of the land. So he's very much aware of that, and this paper, I think, is really going to kind of be the, the dressing, the topping on the cake, whatever you want to call it. This is really going to, lay it out, power and the authority of the people, the seriousness of what these people have done, the destruction of our nation, the destruction of people, of lives, of children, the maintaining of the status quo. It's all going to come out. We're going to lay it out. We're going to go through the Constitution in this case. We're going to go through the Bill of Rights. We're going to go through the rules of the court. We're going to go through even the book, the handbook for the juries, the grand juries, and the trial juries. We're going to go through a lot of these things and lay it out and show how it is destructive to the law of the land. Every bit of it, of what they're doing, has been destructive to our founding documents, destructive to our Bill of Rights, destructive to any and all of our unalienable rights. They have licensed our rights. They have denied our rights. They have hidden our rights. They just don't want to obey. And it's time for them to pay the price. And again, on top of the whole thing, we come with a we come with mercy. Okay, we've got an olive branch. We will put that out as much as we can in the papers. We'll let it be known, cooperation is fine, and we're not going to go after anybody that's cooperating. But resistance, I'd like to say, is what? Futile. We are going to go after those people who resist. For resisting the power and the authority and the sovereignty of we the people. So, we're going to be suing the judiciary for true liberty, to take our liberty back. We've got a tremendous amount of evidence to bring into the court. We also have the evidence of We the People by Robert Schultz, who have done so many things. And we're going to lay out everything that he has done. And he has made it up to the Supreme Court, where the question was asked, actually just under the Supreme Court. I have to go look to see if he actually made it to the Supreme Court itself, but he went through the appellate systems. But the bottom line, their return is that you have a right to redress, ask for redress of grievances, but they don't have a duty or a requirement to answer. Wow. Wow. Then we did the next step with We the People, with the, what was that called? The Continental Congress. The Third Continental Congress met and came to a conclusion. And every state of the union, every state in the capital, brought to the governor and both legislative houses of every state. We did it in a formal way, very formal, with carrying the flags and going in and serving. The conclusion of the Continental Congress, the Third Continental Congress, I forget what year that was in, might have been 2008 or 9, somewhere around there. And we also served the United States Congress and the President of the United States at the time. Matter of fact, it must have been earlier than that, because I think it was Bush, if I recall. But we were met with silence. Okay, so we're going to lay that out. That's going to become part of our case. Again, we have a tremendous amount of evidence that will be filed into the case, and we're going to take it to the hilt. Okay, so we're suing the judiciary for true liberty. Okay, we're suing the Senate Judiciary Committee, and we're also suing the Congressional Judiciary Committee, because they're responsible and for the actions of the Supreme Court, of the federal district courts. They are responsible, okay, and they should know There is no excuse not to know that they have destroyed the law of the land. And then I'm sure they don't know. They're ignorant to this whole fashion because they have not educated themselves in the things that they should be educated in. So we have no choice anyway, but we must sue the judiciary committees in both the houses. We're not going to sue Congress in both houses. It's a little too much, but really focuses on the judiciary committee. We're going to be going in again, as I mentioned, after the United States Supreme Court. We don't have a choice on that. We're going to go after the American Bar Association. They are the ones that have taught the subversion, and we'll get into a lot of detail on that. We're also going to be suing the National Lawyers Guild. Now, that brings us to six different entities, and I'll repeat them. The Federal Judiciary, the American Bar Association, the Senate and Congressional Judiciary Committees, the United States Supreme Court, and the National Lawyers Guild. Six entities. If anybody can think of another entity that needs to be sued that makes sense, bring it to our attention. You could bring it to our attention on a Monday night here or get a hold of Jan and find him. He's the national leader. You can find him under the directory of nationallibertyalliance.org. So get that information to us if you have any ideas on that. Now, getting back to money, someone sent me an email, and I don't recall, I think I just answered, there was an email I answered, and I said I'd answer the question or the point here on the Monday night call. And again, I get a lot of questions, but this one was a question, and I guess people don't understand. Actually, it was two questions. One person wanted to know why we needed $5,000, and only cost $400 to file a case. I don't know that I should really have to explain all that, but there's a lot involved. There's a lot of toner, a lot of paper, a lot of serving, a lot of filing. And it takes time, okay? So $5,000, considering the costs of what we need, it should easily cover it. And it's a safe buffer with $5,000. We would go forward if we had $2,000 or $3,000. But it would be tight. We don't want to be stuck. But $400 is just the beginning, and we're going to demand that money back anyway. We have to pay it in order to get into the court and make the filing and then take control of the court. And, you'll see how we do that when we file these papers. Okay, so as I mentioned, we've collected $9,000. And again, one person sent in $5,000, so we have $4,000 more. We're moving over to the Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. As I mentioned, you can go to our front page. As you skim down, you will see where you can download the Sheriff's Handbook. Read that Sheriff's Handbook, and you'll see and understand how important it is to get that book into the hands of sheriffs across this nation. That is part of trying to bring this country back under the law of the land. We're going after the courts. We need our sheriffs to be educated. We need to be working with the president. The president is working from the top down. We're working from the bottom up to take this nation back. And we're going to do it lawfully through the courts. It'll be the court of the public opinion, really, is what this is going to be. It will be a jury, a trial by jury, and a decision will be made. And it will be done inside a courthouse that we, the people, own, a federal district court up in Albany. Okay, what do we need to accomplish the goal for this sheriff's project? We have to buy, we figure, about 100,000 booklets. We actually need, let me just run a quick number here. We got 3,100 counties, roughly, or sheriffs, times 20 handbooks. Okay, we need 62,000 handbooks to be able to send 20 handbooks to every single sheriff in America. So that's how many handbooks we need. Those handbooks, we need to get about 100,000. There'll be others. Some sheriffs will probably ask for more. I think 20 should suffice most of the sheriff's offices, especially out west and in the smaller areas. but there are some that will ask, you know, they'll need more. They'll ask for more. We want to give it to them. We want to give it to them for free. So we should have about 40,000 left over for that purpose. And also people might want to get a hold of this handbook. I don't know that we're going to sell these handbooks by, you know, blocks of 100 or something. But I think maybe, you know, one, and we'll limit that so that people can have it, and so also so that we have enough to be able to get to the sheriffs if they need more. But we will sell some of these handbooks. It'll be another way for us to kind of get money back into the till and to continue these projects and do other things. I mean, there's no end to what we can do. And the only thing that prevents us from accomplishing all the goals that we really want to accomplish is money. It's a dirty part of business. We have to deal with it. It's money. We need money, and that's that. There's no getting away from it. And but people need, you know, because some people don't understand how things work. We really need to get to a point, and I believe in the future, once we take over, because we're going to have a way to be able to make money through this process. And that's something we've discussed in the past. You can read about it in different places on our website, what our plan is. And I'm not going to get into that tonight, but maybe one evening we'll talk about that. But not tonight. Tonight's not going to be that evening. But anyway, running these numbers to buy 100,000 handbooks, I'm figuring 35 cents each, okay, to buy 100,000. Can we get them cheaper? I don't know. It might even cost a little more, as a matter of fact. These books, like I think I mentioned earlier, is going to be probably three times the thickness, or three times the amount of, at least twice the amount of pages that are in our other handbook, which is the Jurist Handbook. And by the way, I do have Jurist Handbooks. I don't have too many, but, you know, we might sell them for a singular one, you know, at a time to people who might want them. I'll think about a price, and if we do that, I'll make the announcement next week. It'll be a way to help to really kind of get more money up to do the things we need to do. But, you know, we'll sell handbooks one at a time to people, I don't know, maybe $2 a piece or something. I don't know what we'll sell them for, but whatever we can do, I got to figure out how many we have, and we'll put a link on the site, and people can buy them if they want them. You know, we didn't pay that much for these. We were selling them for 68 cents a piece, but you had to buy 100, and they came in boxes of hundreds, and so for $68, $68 covered everything, even the shipping. We'll figure it now. So $2 is a lot of money for these handbooks, considering what we paid for them. But remember, we want to drive to make money in order to do these projects. We need money, and we just don't have it. One of the questions that was asked me, and this is the one I really wanted to answer, was, you know, you have about 7,000 members, and if you're asking for $5 each, and this person presumes 7,000 members has given us $5 each, so you're getting $35,000 a month, which is $420,000 a year. What are you doing with all that money? Well, let me tell you, we don't get anywhere near anything like that. Boy, if we had that kind of money, you would know what we would be doing. The website would be hugely different. We'd be working on the political side of things. There would be so many things going on. We would actually have hired people, you know, people that are working with us that aren't paid doing work, and we could hire people who really are experts in different fields that we really need, okay, to work with us. And get secretaries and really be efficient, you know. I get calls and I get emails and people say, you know, just ask your secretary, you know. I know you're busy. Maybe your secretary can do this or do that and send something, whatever. I don't have a secretary. I'm my secretary. That's who my secretary is, me, you know. Jan is his own secretary, too. He gets a lot of calls, does a lot of calls, does a lot of things. He's involved with all the committees. He's at all the meetings. And he's very busy at what we're doing, and we don't get money for this, you know. I get a little subsidized a little bit because I've exhausted all of my money. I used to run this whole process out of my own pocketbook. But now that we are getting some money in, it's helpful. And now I'm on Social Security and I'm full-time here, so this is where I'm at. I don't want to spend time anywhere else, and I want to get the jobs done that has to be done. But just to give you an example, okay, this will be an embarrassment for many people, and of course there's no names being said, so... But this is where we're at, and it is an embarrassment, in my opinion. Maybe that's what it's going to take to get people really to do something. $5 a month or more is a cup of coffee and a donut or a bagel or something. Once a month. Just give up one cup of coffee and one bagel once a month, and there's your $5. You know, people go out and they buy their children all kinds of things. They spend a lot of money. They ask for a game for $50 a year. They give them cell phones and all this stuff. I mean, if you're doing those things, you can afford $5 to really work with us to help save this nation. And a lot of people can afford a lot more than that. They can afford $10 or $20 or $50 or even $100, you know. I dare to say maybe people can afford more than that, you know. But let me give you an example. This is the actual stats. I just took this tonight before the program. We have 59 people who give us $5 a month, 59. We have 27 people who gives us $10 a month. We have 2 people who gives us $15 a month. We have 11 people who gives us $20 a month. We have 2 people who gives us $50 a month. And we have 1 person who gives us $100 a month. That totals to $1,015 a month to cover the costs. And we've got a lot of costs, you know. To run things is a lot more than that. So sometimes I ask for money here and there, and, you know, by the grace of God, all of a sudden we get an extra 100 here and an extra 50 there, and the next thing you know, we're able to pay the bills. It is depressing, especially at the beginning of the month, and a lot of stress trying to get the bills met, make sure the lights stay on, and so to speak, in other words, the website stays up and things get paid, you know. Even collecting money costs money, okay? And as far as business partners are concerned, we don't make that much money on any of these things that we kind of push. And we don't have that many business partners, and we don't get that much business from that. Every once in a while, we get a few dollars here and a few dollars there. Nothing big at all. So, you know, we are not taking in heaps of money, and we desperately, desperately, desperately need more money. We need to get this project going, okay, on the sheriffs. But we also need more money to support what we're doing here, just to keep the lights on, so to speak. So please, everyone, really think about this, you know. Is what we're doing worth it? Well, prove it. Give us $5 a month or more. For those who are not giving, please give. And those who can afford, more, give us more. Again, we had one individual who gave us $5,000, and again, you have no idea how much help that gives, how much stress takes off, especially me, trying to get this stuff and making commitments and going forward and hoping that we're going to be able to achieve the goals as far as financial goals, you know, to be able to pay the bills, be able to accomplish what it is we're trying to do. So let me go through this to finish this off. The booklets, 100,000 at 35 cents a piece, that may not even be enough. Even though we could get 100,000 of the other booklets, I think, at 21 cents a piece. But again, these books are going to be twice the thickness, maybe even three. A number of pages. So it's a bigger book. It weighs more. It's going to cost more to ship and to the sheriffs, and it's going to cost more to ship to us. We have to have all these booklets shipped from, we get printed out in California. I think it was $1,000 coming in on pallets when we would get the other books. Got a couple of pallets come in off a truck. And it cost a couple of $100 to have it shipped. I don't remember what it was. I think it was a lot more than just a couple of hundred. But also the shipping out, to ship this out to people, costs money. So anyway, if it's 35 cents a piece, that's $35,000 we need in order to get 100,000 books. We figure the mailing to 3,100 sheriffs. We figure 20 handbooks. To each sheriff, they weigh a little over an ounce. They're going to weigh a little over an ounce apiece, maybe an ounce and a half, possibly two. But they do have this lightweight paper that's really nice. It's strong. It's durable. You don't see through. And we did get an example of that. So the weight may be a little less. And the weight is important because when you put these many booklets together and you figure out the weight involved with it, it gets quite high. Now, if it's 20 ounces, which I think we can go more than that, we're going to do media mail. But let's say 20 handbooks are 20 ounces. Okay. We were paying between $5.50 and $6.50 to ship the handbooks in a box, okay, which had 100 in them. Okay, there was 100 handbooks. And so the 100 handbooks had 100 ounces. And so even if this is doubled, if it's 40 ounces, it'll be okay. But depending on where it was going, you know, as long as it was under a certain weight, it was $5.50, I'd like to say, on this side of the Mississippi or on this side of the mountain. And when you get onto the other side, and I think it was the other side of the Mississippi, when you get on the other side, it costs $6.50, okay? So I'm just figuring $6.50, period, okay? Which gives us a little bit of a buffer for mailing additional stuff, and maybe for the cost of being maybe 35 cents, maybe it'll be 36 cents. And 100,000 times a penny, you know, that gets up there, okay? So, as a matter of fact, 100,000 times a penny is $1,000, if I'm understanding it right, moving the decimal point over 2 points. So it's a lot of money. So as far as the cost is going, you know, another penny. Okay, so the total comes out to be $55,000. That's the Do the Sheriff's Project. I am going to be begging, pleading, sending emails out to our membership on at least a weekly basis. I don't want to annoy people every day, but at least on a weekly basis, begging for money. I'm asking everybody. For those who have given already, fine. I'm asking for those who have not given yet to the project for getting our judiciary, you know, lawsuit against the judiciary program going. Anybody who hasn't given any money to that, okay, please, $50 one time or more. Go out to our donation page and give us $50 or more. And a one-time gift donation to National Liberty Alliance, we take the credit cards. We even have PayPal up there, and we have a mailing address if people want to send a check or a money order. And if anybody sends cash, we do get people that send cash sometimes. So if anybody sends cash, I suggest wrap it in a piece of tin foil. And then put a fold the paper around it and then stick it in the envelope. And some people just insist on doing that. So I would suggest doing a money order or a check, and you make it out to NLA. But please, I'm going to push our entire membership, and I'm going to be relentless with this. This is a drive, and I wish everyone else would do a drive. Maybe people can talk to people. You know, talk with other people, and bring them to our website. Tell them what we're trying to do. Show them the book and ask them, you know, can you give $50 a one-time gift? Even $20, $10, whatever it is. You collect the money and then send it in to us. Get a money order, put it in a bank, give it a check, whatever you want to do, do a credit card. But let's do it. I'm going to be relentless with this. We're going to push. This $4,000 laying around, it'll be very helpful to pay off when the bills, we can't afford it. That's nice. But it's a lot of money, in my opinion, to just leave laying around. Let's get more money. Let's do this project. Let's try to get up to $55,000, $60,000. $55,000 and $60,000 will do two huge things. Let's say $60,000, $5,000 more than what we need. If we get $60,000, It's just, and remember, you know, when we get these booklets, okay, we have to open up every box, okay, and we have to, you know, count out 20 and put them into a little box, wrap it up, and get it all together and then take it down to the post office. And, you know, nobody gets paid for that. But usually I do this, my kids will help, and my wife will help, and sometimes we'll have some friends who come over and help. But basically, that's just another job that I have to do. But it has to be done. It has to be done. And so we have 3,000 boxes to make up. I remember when we mailed out to all the sheriffs some papers, and we went through and we put each one in envelopes and so on and so forth. And the amount of time and effort it took was huge for 3,000 sheriffs. Check it off of the... I don't know what happened here.
Yeah, you were on and off, John, and you disappeared for a little, came back on.
All right, you can hear me, though?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. All right, I'm trying to get back on to the website because the website went down, too, at the same time. So let me try to get back up onto the website, log in here. Okay, it's making a connection. And I'm going to click. We're at a live conference. I don't know why it's not. I have no control board, so just so you know that. If I get disconnected, I'm talking to myself. Please call my cell phone, Jan.
Yeah, we hear you fine. No problem.
Okay. All right. I don't have no board, though. I can't see anything. It's a blank board to me. So. All right, let me think where I was. So we got, if we can push for $60,000, that's going to be our goal, $5,000 more. That will do two things. It'll give us the buffer we need because, you know, we may be underestimating the cost of the books, you know, maybe more than 35 cents each. And also, it'll also help if we're short on bills at the end of the month. As months go on, that's going to help there, too. But on the other side of the coin here, even though you give them $50, anybody's given $50 or more for this project, you know, please support National Liberty Alliance on a monthly basis with $5 a month or more. And you know, it is true. If 7,000 members gave $5 a month or more, that's $35,000 a month. You know, we wouldn't even have to be asking for money for the sheriff's program. We wouldn't have to be asking for money for anything anymore, okay? And we would get the project. Not only would we get the project up and going on the sheriff's project, we would also get the project up on the booklets for, you know, for the jurist, the hand booklets. We'd go print out a couple of 100,000 of those and get those going. And then we'd print out a couple of 100,000 of the sheriffs, and we'd give people, you know, we'd sell them by boxes of hundreds, you know, and we'd give a good deal on that. And a matter of fact, that's probably the best thing is the sheriff's handbook because it covers everything in the jurist handbook and a heck of a lot more. But it is designed around the sheriff, though. Now, bear that in mind. Nevertheless, it's a great handbook. Great, great handbook. Anybody going into the court and making an argument, defending themselves, it's a great handbook to take in with you. So you definitely would want that. Hey, let me ask you a question, Jan. When you look at the live conference, do you see the word off or the word on?
It's on mine.
Okay.
You better click yours on. If it isn't, then you'll see the panel.
But does it say on or does it say off?
It says on.
Says
so if
on,
yours says
so if I,
off, you need to click it.
Okay. Let me try to do that. I'm just going to reboot my browser first, come back up with the browser, and then try to get back in again. So here we go. Log in. Accessing. Reconnecting. Okay, so I'm going to click it, and it'll say on. Okay, there it is. I'm back. I got the board back. All right. Makes me feel a lot better. I could see if my voice is coming through and everything that way. Okay, so that's it with that project. And again, on the one hand, it's a lot of money. Okay, but look, we have 7,000 members. Now, you know, we don't expect that all 7,000 members be active. But we do expect a large percentage of them to be active because we're an active group. You're on our mail list. We've had people ask us to take us off the mail list. You know, they want to be a member, but, well, we let them know. If we take them off the mail list, they lose their membership, you know. And in some, a lot of people will change their mind and stay on it. Because we are an active group. We don't want dead weight. We don't want to turn around and say, hey, everybody, let's go do it now, and nobody shows up for, you know, the battle. So we need to be an active group, and we need, it's all about education. That's where really the activity is about, educating. Okay, so that's it for that. As I mentioned, collectively, I think I just mentioned, we collect through this process $1,015, okay? And we only have 59, 60, 70, 80, 90. We have about 100 people that are actually given on a monthly basis. 100 people. We need more activity here. We need more help. We need money. And this is for the salvation of the nation. This is for saving the nation. This is, no one is doing the work we're doing. You know, people are bringing different names up to me. We're very much aware of these names, you know. And I don't want to say anything very specific about any of these people, but I want to tell you, they are extremely different than us. They are not compatible. We have not met any group that is pursuing the things that we're doing that is compatible with us, okay? We do not, will not deal with the bar. We don't have bar lawyers, okay? Now, we would take on a bar lawyer, someone who has a bar license but is working in the common law and is pursuing trying to get the common law back up and understands what's going on, maintains their bar license for the purpose of their career and being able to go in the courts. But we only know one that's doing that, and they from time to time get in trouble picking that position, going up against the establishment, so to speak. But generally speaking, we don't have lawyers. And we don't want lawyers sticking their nose into our writing and what we're doing, unless they are common law lawyers, unless they understand the law of the land. So if we find a lawyer that has that ability, fine, we'll work with them. But all those groups out there, they have bar lawyers, okay? We are not compatible in any way, shape, or form with any of them. One of them works very strongly with statutory processes in the civil courts. I've been to that person's website, very egotistical website, very self-focused, and it's just not compatible with us. There's another one that does the law and the land, the sovereign citizen, and all the language stuff. We're not into that. We're into what's real, okay? All of that is fraud. We don't need to bring that up. And when that comes to play, we will let it be known. That's fraud, and we think we maybe have to indict you for that. We'll see what the grand jury has to say now. We don't play the game of the sovereign citizen. We don't play the game of the man on the land and all the different language. We did used to do that. In the beginning, we did that because we thought that's the way it was. But we've gotten one heck of an education over the 10 years we've been focusing in on this stuff. And that's how long we've been in the courts, 10 years. National Liberty Alliance, I think we calculated a while ago, I think, when did we, I'd have to go back and look, but I think, I think we'll go back to 2014, 2013, when we went to National Liberty Alliance. Before that, we were New York Liberty Alliance, and before that, we were New York Committeemen. Okay, so that was our, how we've come to be for what we were to what we are today. Okay, everybody, please, give up that bagel and cup of coffee, please. If you're not given, please, give up that bagel and cup of coffee. And if you are given, thank you. We appreciate it. Your money's going for a good cause. And as far as our project going, everybody, even those who are giving on a monthly basis, please, give us $50 or more. Let's get this project moving. I will report every month, every week, what we've got. Right now, we've got about $4,000. Maybe it's $4,100. I'll have to, look closer for next Monday to be as accurate as I can. But we'll start reporting on what we got next month. Next week, maybe we'll have $7,000. Maybe the week after that, we'll have $12,000. Let's hope that that is the case. Okay, let's do what we got to do. Take donations from people where you live. Go talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends. Tell them what we're doing. Ask them to go out, get a copy of the sheriff's handbook, and show it to them, and saying this is the education that they don't have. Just print it out. You know, you could do a two-side printing on this if you want. I mean, most printers do two-side printing these days. But whatever. Print out the sheriff's handbooks. Print out a couple of copies.
Yeah.
You know, again, it'll be big pages. You know, it's on an 8.5 by 11. It's not a pocket handbook you can stick in your pocket. We have to get them created. But print them out. You know, show it to people, your friends, your neighbors, acquaintances, and then ask them if they would help to, you know, donate some money, you know, in order to help this cause to get into the hands of every single sheriff a copy of a handbook, a pocket handbook. Every sheriff and every deputy can have it in their top pocket, and they can pull it out and refer to it at any time. It's written in that way. So please, if you haven't read that handbook, go up and read it. If you've got any comments on that, there's still time to make corrections and add some things. So, you know, or take some things out if that's necessary. You know, any comments on that, you can bring that up on a Monday night program, or you can bring that up to Jan. Again, he's under the directory as National Leadership. And get those comments and thoughts out. Get active in committees. The most important thing, more important than getting active in a committee, is getting active in your education. Okay? People need to be educating themselves on a daily basis, you know. You need to feed yourself intellectually, spiritually, you know. Everybody should be reading, you know, everybody can read 15 minutes a day, you know. You should be reading the good book 15 minutes a day, and you should be reading things concerning what we're doing 15 minutes a day. That's a half hour reading. That's good. Over time, it'll benefit you. Take our courses if you haven't taken our courses. Sign up for our new course coming up, okay? We've got quite a people. How many people we have signed up for that course right now, Jan? Do you know? Has anybody taken a look at that?
It was about 167 the last time I looked.
Okay, 167 have signed up on our new course. And by the way, those people who have signed up on our new course, you know, that course you need to be, in order to get that course, you need to be a supporting member. We'd like to say that we're not charging for that, and in a sense we are, and in a sense we're not. We're saying be a member, a supporting member of $5 a month or more, and you have free access to that course. So unless you're a supporting financial member, you're not going to get into that course, with the exception of people who are on a real tight budget. There are people in Social Security getting minimum, maybe $830, which I think is the minimum, a month. Maybe they're getting some food stamps. Nobody can survive on that kind of money. And so anybody that's on that kind of a situation, an income so small that they can't afford $5 a month or more, but, and believe me, there are people in that situation, you just let Jan know, nationallibertyalliance.org, just let Jan know, go under the directory, give him a call, and let him know that you'd like to, you know, get into that course, but you don't have the $5 a month or more. And Jan will flip button. I believe we've worked that out with Carl, our tech guy, and Jan should be able, I think, to get in. If not, we'll show him how to do it. And flip a button to allow you to come in without having to donate, okay? And but again, you know, anybody coming in for that course should be donating. So we have 165 people into that course, and we only have 100 people that are donating right now, period. So, you know, the course has not started yet, and I apologize that, you know, we keep saying it's going to come, but we get so busy and so many things going. And we are still writing on that. And again, writing these papers are going to really work with writing this course too. Once we get the introduction and at least two, maybe three chapters done, we're going to open the course up, and we're going to try to stay ahead of the game. I don't know how many chapters it's going to be, but we're going to just open it up and try to stay ahead of the game, and people can start doing it. And I don't want to say when that might be, because, again, I don't know. I'm going to be doing some really big brainstorming. You know, I got so much stuff we've been writing, but I have to sit down and do a brainstorming on the structure of this paper. Now that it's really serious, I had to do a paper that's just the structure of what we're going to file in the court. And then off of that structure, then we'll start writing. We're pulling together things that we've already written, memorandums and different studies we've done on these things and papers we've written, pulling from here and pulling from there. So a lot of this paper, a lot of this stuff may already be written, but it has to be put together, and there's going to be a lot of things that have to be sewed together to make this work. And then also there'll be areas and things we haven't covered yet that has to be written yet. So, again, we'll do the best we can. Nevertheless, look, if you're waiting for the course and you don't want to give the money until the course comes up, let me ask you to bypass that thought and give us some $5 a month or more as you're sitting waiting for that course coming. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else. Let me go to announcements. I didn't think I'd be on this long doing this, but announcements. We have some people that need to speak. Jan, I believe.
Yes, we do. Rich Merritt from New Hampshire is here tonight. Would like to say a few words about what he's doing. Now a good time for that. I can unmute him.
Yep, unmute him. We'll take it. I'll mute myself.
No, can you hear me okay?
Yep,
yeah.
Got you.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Years ago, we started researching in the state of New Hampshire, researching the Constitution and amendments, and we discovered that there were 31 felony violations that the state was committing against the people of New Hampshire. So I sent off a letter to the governor, asked him for a meeting. We met with his legal counsel on September 28th last year. I finally got a response from him February 5th, and that was only because a state rep was in attendance at the meeting we had, and he's the one that prompted the response. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got an answer. So on July 5th, Dan Michaud, who's my counterpart, filed a lawsuit against the governor because the governor neglected his responsibility by not correcting these felony violations against the people. So we're suing him for an outrageous amount of money, because he stepped outside the realm of being governor by not doing his job. The reason I'm bringing this all up is what we found, and I can't get into all the details, but if you'd like the lawsuit and the motion for reinstatement, or reconsideration, excuse me, my email address is nlarjmnh@gmail.com. And if you send me an email requesting it, I'll be happy to send you that information. What we're looking for is this, because I believe this is my suspicion and a few other people's too, is that this has happened all over the country. During the 1960s, in 1964 in New Hampshire, they came up with this legislative office service, which was comprised of three bar members, attorneys. Their responsibility was the task of basically putting down the information to send to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State would prepare it in the voter's guide for the people for any amendment changes to the Constitution. Well, what we've uncovered is that they've changed the meaning of words over the years. This is especially in the 60s now, 1960s. In one instance, they put five questions down, and there was only one choice of an answer. It was a yes or no answer, but one yes or no answer for all five questions, which is impossible, unless they're all the same question, which they weren't. But the original Constitution in New Hampshire said, in order to vote or hold office, you have to be an inhabitant of the state. And this is the way they used the wording, dwelleth and hath a home. Now, just 3 weeks in the 1960s, they changed that to domicile, and I can't go through the process right now, there's not enough time, but what it does is it traffics people through their system, the U.S. citizen thing, being a citizen of the U.S. citizen, which, of course, none of us are, but we all check off the box to say we are because we're trying to be patriotic. But at any rate, they've changed all of this stuff. They've actually added an addendum to the Constitution that wasn't even put in front of the people for their consent. And in case anybody doesn't know it out there, I believe with NLA people, everybody does, but the only one that can change the Constitution is the people. The legislature can't change it, not without the consent of the people. And that's what we found in this case. So what I'm asking is if you want to do a little bit of research, get your Constitution, find out what amendments were, what articles or amendments, I'm not sure what they're called in your state, articles were amended in the 1960s. Start doing a little research in the archives, get all the voters' guides for that time, find out if what the voters' guide said that they were giving to the people was reflected in the amendments in the Constitution. And if my suspicions are correct, I think we're going to find that a lot of states have the same exact issue that we have here in New Hampshire. And if that's the case, my personal opinion is in the bar is history in this country, or they should be, because if there's a concerted effort on a statewide level across the board to do this, I mean, it's concrete evidence. The National Liberty Alliance can spearhead the movement, go to the Liberty Beacon, all these big groups out there, start sharing this information, letting everybody know that it's there. And John even mentioned filing a lawsuit on that issue if it comes to fruition. But since you only have to target the 1960s, I think it's going to be easy and quick to do. You go to the archives, and you have to get an old version. The best bet is to get an old version, an original version of your Constitution for the state. Whenever it was ratified in New Hampshire was 1783. Our Constitution took effect in 1784 as one of the first ones. So we worked off of that Constitution. And you can find them online, by the way. I can't give you the address because I don't know what it is for your state, but you can find them online. We looked at 1784, 1805, 1895, 1960, all different years to find out what the different changes are. Whether or not you want to be that extensive, that's entirely up to you. But I think if you just limit your range from the 1960s, you should be fine. And then, like I said, send me the information, your email address. I'll send you the court case, and you can read it and find out for yourself. It's very lengthy. Well, it's not that lengthy, but it's between that and the motion for reconsideration. It's probably 20, 25 pages. Anyway, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And I happen to agree with John and Jan that President Trump is trying to push from the top down. It's incumbent upon us all to be pushing from the bottom up. And I've been one of the ones that have been shirking their responsibility financially. But, John, now that I'm working, I'm going to start sending you some money. So I apologize for not doing it in the past. I just couldn't afford it. So thank you for your time, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Anybody else have an announcement or something they need to say, Jen?
Yeah, I'd like to kind of follow up on what you said tonight. We have about 7,000 members. If each one of those members gave us 1 hour of time to help us out, we'd have 7,000 hours, man hours, a month. Wouldn't that be peachy keen? Right now we need people. We have two groups that need people. One would be to research in all the other 49 states the information that Richie was just talking about. If we had 1% of that 7,000, that'd be 70, we'd have more than enough people to cover all those states at the same time. So I would like to ask that people consider giving us a little bit of time. It isn't just dollars. I know the dollars are important. Without the dollars, we can't move forward. But if we can't get the data processed and things like that, we can't move forward either. Now, the second problem we have is with the Welcome Committee. We need people to help out for the Welcome Committee. 7,000 members, and I don't think we have but 3 or 4 people that are working on the welcome committee. There's something about making phone calls to people that just scares people off for some reason. What these people need to do is to contact each new member as they come in. We can't, with our present personnel, even keep up contacting each and every new member when they come in and giving them some guidance and then getting them to the website and beginning to show them what to do. We have 1,100, no, we have a little over 1,000 grand jury administrators out of those 7,000 people. It's at 15%. And of those, I think there's only about a third of them that have actually finished all of the requirements that we have to date. So there again, we have a need for people to step up and even work on their own issues, not even helping other people, but helping themselves. If we could get just 10 people to help out on the welcome committee, that would be a great help. Now, I'll tell you right up front, you will be given some training and a telephone, yours, and you will make calls. So if you are very shy on the telephone, it's not going to work. If you like to call people, you're gregarious, you don't mind, it's just fun and just like talking to the people next door, by all means, give me a call or send me an email and I'll put you on the list and put you into contact with the welcome committee people who are just waiting to train you and get you started. Now the researchers, we can work with Richie. He can send out his two documents, the lawsuit and so on, and tell you, he already gave the approximate time span of about, well, the 60s and then on as to when these things were done in Vermont. And like he says, more than likely, they happened about pretty much the same time all over the country. The bar is pretty efficient, works pretty rapidly. So if we just had, it would be nice to have 50. I think we can settle for less. People who are willing to do some research. It doesn't involve calling people. It just involves a little computer time. You all Google things all the time. There's nothing new about it. It's just what you're looking for. It's going to be a little different. So I would greatly appreciate it if you could either call me, my number's on the site, under the directory, or send me an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we can get both of these projects going full swing. That's all I have for announcements, John. I have several questions if you want to do questions now.
Yeah, and just one minute. Okay, yeah, so as Jan says, you know, if we can get everyone to give us an hour a month, that's 7,000 hours, that is huge, okay? You know, we'll find, you know, work with individuals on where their strong points are so that they can help us succeed and get things done. There was one other thing I wanted to bring up, and I skipped my mind here, I lost it. So I guess maybe I'll remember after the questions, but go ahead with the questions.
Okay, this one is from someone who's been getting a lot of notices from Convention of the States that wants support. And I'll just read a little bit of what she said. She had a whole page. I know you've addressed this before, since there would be the proposal of amendments to the Constitution. Mostly they talk about removing amendments that interfere with our rights. The 14th Amendment, would that be a target amendment? I'm afraid of messing with the Constitution too much. I've seen a couple of pickups locally carrying billboards supporting the Convention of the States. What is your feeling about the Convention of the States, John?
Well, I think we should expect that these people that want to have a convention of the states and all of the individuals that are in office particularly, I think first we need to exercise what we do have before we go looking to see what we need. We don't need anything more. This matter of fact, it's my opinion, we don't need to do anything to the Constitution. It is in pristine condition, in my opinion. Yeah, we can find a problem here or there, but they really don't affect us in today's world. You know, 150 years ago, it was a problem. Today, it's not a problem for us. So in those areas, again, one or two areas, it doesn't even mean anything. So the other thing is that, you know, let's take the 14th Amendment. It's a play on words is what it is, okay? And I'll bring up the 14th Amendment, and I'll make a note of it here or there, but I'll make note of the 5th Amendment, and maybe necessary the 4th Amendment or whatever. We really have to start right. exercising what we have before we get anything new, you know? So mute. Okay, you already got him. Well, I just unmute him. Let me mute him again. Okay. I would stay far away. I would not support it. I talk against it and so on and so forth. Look at the enemy wants to do this. This is really the enemy's decision. People are not educated. They don't even understand the Constitution. How could they possibly go and discuss changing it or adding to it? They have no knowledge. I'd like to, matter of fact, if someone could get me this group's information, maybe a phone number, maybe a website, I'd like to get a hold of that and talk to these people and see where they're at. Because I'll bet you dollars to donuts, they haven't got a clue on the Constitution. I'll bet you dollars to donuts, okay? And yet they want to have some kind of a convention to mess around with the Constitution. But we don't have the people... with a backbone, with the knowledge and the understanding to be able to really pull together a national convention, you know, of some kind of the states to talk and to amend and toy around with the Constitution. Let me tell you, do these people realize, and I'd like to know if they realize the problem with the 17th Amendment, the 16th Amendment. Do they realize it? Do they realize the problem of the 13th Amendment? And, of course, the 14th Amendment, you know. Do they know that the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment was never ratified? I can prove that. I've got all of the documents to prove that. They've never been ratified. Do they know that the 17th Amendment, in order to have, and they haven't even corrected this. The 17th Amendment is in place, and yet they have not corrected. There's two places in the Constitution that talks about the senators, and they have not corrected those two areas. Okay, the right of equal suffrage, for instance. In other words, suffrage means the right to vote, the right for the state to vote. The states don't have a right to vote no more. The states are no longer sovereign. They have absolutely zero opinions, ideas, or input to the federal government. Zero. The federal government ignores them, doesn't have to listen to them. And they do what they please, and they walk all over the states. And the states wonder why? Well, look, we've already notified every governor. Nullification of the 17th Amendment. A, it hasn't been ratified. B, you have the power of nullification. C, you're sovereign. Pull your senators back. Send your own senators and tell Washington to go to hell. You're going to take our senators, and we're going to have a vote because we have a right to equal suffrage in the Senate. And they don't have it. And yet... we have not got one response from one governor. We've sent information to every governor of the United States, and we've got nothing in return, no response from them. That's pretty pitiful. Why? Because they don't understand even what we're talking about. They don't understand. They don't understand the word sovereign. They don't understand the fact that they have no vote in the Senate. You know, the states, they have to have a vote. They've upset the balance of power when they put that 17th Amendment in play. I'll bet you dollars to donuts these people have no idea about what we're talking about here tonight. None. Zero. Yeah, maybe one or two here or there. But what are one or two going to do when you have, 100, 500, 1,000 people coming together and trying to debate and put together something? They have no clue what they're talking about. They don't have the integrity. They don't have the morality. They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the wisdom. They don't have the mercy. They don't have the understanding. They don't have anything. Wait till we, the people, become educated. Wait 20 years, 30 years from now. Lord willing, the world still exists. But let's wait 20, 30 years. Let's win back our courts. Let's bring back the Constitution into play. Let's start getting the law of the land going. Let's start pulling these people out when they take that funny money, and let's put them in jail. Let's exercise the Constitution we have. Let's get our schools going. Let's take back our education. Get rid of the centralization of education. Let's get rid of that. Let's bring it back to the people, to the local. Let's get civics taught to these children. Let's get access into our courts taught to the children. Let's get the Constitution taught to our children. Let's bring down the education to 8 years. Forget about 12 years. That's indoctrination. That's all they're doing. Let's get a real education. Let's take 8 years and we put 12 years. No, forget about 12 years. We put 16 years of education into 8 years. Let's do that. That can be done. Because our children is learning a lot of BS. They're being held back. They're not being taught how to think. They're being taught how to do, okay, and what to do. They're not being taught morality. They're not being taught anything concerning what our nation is all about. They don't know who our founding fathers are. They think that Jefferson was beside himself because he continued to own slaves. They have no clue what was going on in those days and why Jefferson continued to hold slaves. They don't know that Jefferson fought as a governor of Virginia and that he fought as a representative, I believe twice, maybe three times, and every time he went in to try to defeat the laws concerning slavery in Virginia. How come people don't talk about that? How come people don't understand or know that when Jefferson was fighting this battle, he inherited his slaves? Some of his early memories is being in the arms of black women who were slaves who took care of him and nursed him, dressed him, and raised him. And he had a great relationship with those people, and he loved them. And he wanted to free them, but it was against the law to free them. How come people don't talk about that? It was against the law. It was illegal for an individual to free a slave. If you didn't want to have a slave, you wanted to get rid of your slave, you needed to sell him. And that's what Jefferson refused to do. How come people don't know that? They don't know that. And they want to debate the Constitution. They have no knowledge of history and what took place and what was going on. They have no knowledge of how much Christianity played in the creation of this nation. They have no knowledge of the fact that we're under the law of God and the king of the court is Christ himself, if I might say so, but it's God is the king of the court. They have no knowledge of that, and they want to play with our Constitution. Our founding fathers understood that clearly, absolutely clearly. And we're going to have people who have been demoralized, have no understanding of any of these things. We'd be in trouble if we allow that to be. 20, 30 years from now, we can consider it. And I think 20, 30 years from now, and we will be successful. Again, Lord willing, the world's still here, but nevertheless, we will be successful if time goes on, I believe. And we start working in the schools and educate our children, educate ourselves. Okay, let's not forget ourselves and our children. And in 20 years, you know what, we're going to look up and say, we have no need to even play with this document because it works so well. Let's exercise it before we think we need to play with it. The problem is we're not exercising it. The people have to stop the nonsense. They got to get a real education. They got to stop reading these stupid websites thinking that what they're reading and learning over there is real stuff. You know, they go into court, and I want to tell you, I've done the same thing. I went into the court on the man on the land and all that stuff. You know, I look back and I see what a moron I must have looked like. These people are laughing at us, okay? And to some degree, rightly so, okay, because we're exercising something that's not necessary to exercise. It's insanity to begin with, exercise and insanity. And you go into it and you make these arguments, it just didn't make no sense. Look at, let's just take reality for what it is. The law is the law. Fraud is fraud, and let's call it for what it is, fraud. You want to play that game and think a word means something in order that you can enslave us or do this or do that? Well, you're a fraud. You belong in jail. Let's indict them. Let's try them. You know, let's do what has to be done to correct those problems before we even think about going near touching our Constitution. And let me tell you something. There's a story out there. This is history, where our founding fathers were debating and fighting, and they wasn't getting anywhere. And they were fighting for days on certain issues. And they said, and I think it was George Washington. It could have been Franklin or some other one person, but I'm pretty sure it was George Washington said, let's call for a time of prayer and come back. And do you know how long that time of prayer lasted? This is history. 3 days. They went into prayer for 3 days, and they came back, and they found peace, and they found agreement. These people are going to do that? I don't think so. We're going to do that? I don't think so. Can we do that? Yeah, if we get re-educated, if we start to learn what our history, real history really is, or what really it takes to bring this nation back to liberty and the blessings of liberty. Remember, the beginning of the Constitution, one of the 6 points is the blessings of liberty. That's the purpose of the Constitution, okay? And for our government to protect the blessings of liberty. A blessings of liberty requires the smiles of God upon us, as George Washington would say. The smiles of God upon us, okay? And people will mock that statement. They'll make fun of it. They'll deny it. They'll get irky about it, and they don't feel comfortable about it. Well, we're not a people able to really bring back the law of the land under nature's God. We're not capable of doing that. We're not capable of discussing it. We're not capable of debating it. And let me tell you, the people who will be at this place that will take the control will be the people to destroy what we're trying to save. So we better watch out and stay away from something like that. All right, I went too long on that. Jan, go ahead. What else we got? Hope I didn't put you to sleep.
Okay, the next one says, refer to NLA's book, The UCC Connection, How to Free Yourself from Legal Tyranny, and that's available on Amazon. It's not our book. I don't know where he got it.
I don't know what they're talking about.
I searched our website and couldn't find anything. I thought
no, we have nothing like that. We have nothing. We have nothing like that.
So anyway,
so
they're
confused with that. So I don't know what that is. So, but again,
so it says page 24 discusses dishonoring a presentment by a so-called government collecting agency with a simple.
Is this the on that book?
Yeah, it's a quote out of the book.
Yeah,
on page 24.
I have nothing to comment on that. I mean,
okay.
You know, this isn't our book, and we don't work with those things. But we'll read the question. Maybe we can give some ideas on it.
Okay. A presentment by a so-called government collecting agency with a simple letter stating the presentment above is dishonored, and your name has reserved all of his rights under the Uniform Commercial Code at 1-308. Does this continue to be successful in your experience, and if so, should it be used as often as necessary upon receiving subsequent presentments?
Well, again, you know, I thought they said presentment by the government, but then they said, I think they said presentment by the people, right? And they were looking at, you know, trying to reserve their rights in this presentment. Is that what they're saying?
Well, yeah, I think it's the so-called government that keeps sending him. In other words, it's the so-called government collecting agency keeps sending presentments.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the government sending presentments, and I'm not sure what that even means, to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody else has any idea on that. I don't know what that's all about. I'd have to see that document and kind of understand it. I've never received anything like that. And I've been involved with a lot of government agencies that hate my guts. So, I don't know.
Okay, let's try another.
I have no comment on that. I can't comment. And it's not our book, so.
Yeah, okay. This is from the same fellow. Does setting up an LLC, placing therein one's personal assets, protect one from collection attempts, levies, liens, and so forth by those who do not own the property, e.g. so-called government collection agencies, third-party debt collectors, and so forth?
Well, absolutely. If you and I've worked with other companies doing these kind of things when I was doing management, and you know, you create, you take all of your equipment and everything you have. You know, let's say you're a site contractor, and you got bulldozers and all kinds of equipment and machinery and tools and stuff, and you put them into a corporation. Okay, as owning that, and that corporation really doesn't do any business with anybody but one of your other corporations. So you lease out the machines from this corporation to that to pay. So there's an income coming into that corporation which pays for, you know, the payments on the machines and the upkeep and so on and so forth from one company to another. And that builds a firewall so that the actual construction company that's out there gets a major lawsuit against them. They can't come and seize their equipment, or they can't lose their equipment in a court case. So that is something you could do. You might want to think about a common law trust, okay? And the difficulty is I know how to do a common law trust, but I have not got the time to do one for someone else. And matter of fact, National Liberty Alliance is a common law trust. And I don't know how that would play in the commercial field, though. You know what I mean? So, but corporations are fine for that. As long as the corporation isn't at risk, there you go, you're fine. You want to make a separation and be careful on the ownerships, though. You know, because, again... Not that it's, I don't know, you really have to talk with a lawyer on this, and this is where a lawyer might be helpful, of course. Remember, these bar lawyers do have some education in areas that is good, where statutes are applied, like in the commercial realms. There are lawyers that are focused in on the commercial law and corporations and creating corporations and, you know, how to create the different firewalls between the corporations. They know all that stuff. And they're good at it, and it's real, and it's right, and it's lawful, that kind of stuff. You know, the problems we have is what they have is called civil law and criminal law, okay? When the criminal law uses penal law, and they have all these, you know, different rules and criterias and requirements, statutes, you know, so many years in prison and so much a fine, and guess who gets the money, by the way? The state gets the money, not the individual injured. And all that other stuff. So you see, that's where the problem is in criminal law and civil law, and that's what affects we the people. Okay, if you're in the commercial business, okay, then the state and the federal government have every right to make the necessary statutes for that process to maintain things, you know, in order, you know, commercial law. Some of it may be bad law, that's true, but generally speaking, I don't think it isn't, because my involvement with it, and I was involved with the lawyers and the big contractors and everything doing things of this nature, and I thought everything was great, the process was great, and so on. I didn't really see anything that was repugnant. You know, that comes to when we come to our unalienable rights, that's where they affect us. So anyway, yeah, that's a good idea. And you can and should talk to a lawyer that deals with those things. You got to be careful. You get a lawyer, maybe a lawyer is a little cheaper than another lawyer, and they say, oh, yeah, we can handle it, but they don't really have the experience. And believe me, I've dealt with lawyers that didn't have the experience in certain areas, and I realized that I get rid of them. You know, if you have a construction lawsuit going on and you're involved in a contract, okay, and there are certain commercial laws that might apply towards that contract, but the contract is the contract. And if they don't have a background and an ability in that area, then they're not going to be the person you really want. You know, they have to have the experience, so you have to get the right lawyer. So again, in those areas, the lawyer being a lawyer is good. Okay, what else?
Okay, the next one is pretty much a statement. It says, I tried to give the clerk of courts, plaintiff's attorney, and the judge, which all refused, my special appearance form, which I stated I was appearing as an interpreter for a Filipino woman. I tried to file an appeal, but the clerk said I was not a party to the case. And then he gives two quotes from a Supreme Court stuff that says the practice of law cannot be licensed by any state, and the practice of law is an occupation of common right. Maybe some comments about that. He didn't really ask a question.
Right. Yeah, look, that's a violation of an individual's unalienable right. The unalienable right, particularly the person who wants some counseling and being an interpreter to some degree is counseling too. And they have every right to do that, to bring anybody they want into their case to assist at different levels. You know, look, at I have an extensive, a very extensive knowledge of construction law, the AIA standards, and I could be a very valuable asset to a team making an argument, and in many cases be the person to stand up and make the argument concerning the contract, what's going on, and what took place out at the job site, and what's going on. You're not just as a witness, but also as someone to represent. They don't like that, okay? They don't want anyone that's not a bar attorney, because you're not in the game. You're not in the team. You're not one of the boys' clubs, you know. But what you could do is take it to the federal courts. They don't really have a big, you know, look, if they like to stay with status quo, but in a case like this, if you're careful and don't write and be careful with your writing and just stay on point, you could probably get a federal judge to agree with you on this. Because they got to play enough of the game in certain areas. They got to feel good somewhere, I guess, and make the right decisions. And it doesn't really upset the status quo that much to make a decision on your behalf. But also, if they don't make the right decision, you could take it up the appeal system and even in the federal court. And you should be able to win on the fact of being able to come in to represent someone or to represent yourself or whatever the case may be. Make your case. All right, what else?
What's that, Ariel?
You may still be muted there, Jan, if you're talking.
Yes, that was the last thing that I had, John. There is some background noise of people talking on your channel.
Okay, behind me?
Yeah.
Yeah, my nephews. Yeah, I'll tell them to be a little quieter.
Okay,
hang on a second. Okay, got it.
Yep, that was the last thing I had. Yep.
Okay, great. All right, let me think where we're going to go from here. I think we're going to go over to Brent in a second or two. I just want to look at some notes, make sure there's nothing else that I need to cover. I'm just going to, you know, embarrass myself and plead for money. Come on, we need $50 if you haven't given it or more. If you can afford it, you know, if you can't afford it, maybe you get $5, but let's do something special for getting this sheriff's project off the ground. And like I said, I'm going to really be pushy on this, at least on a weekly basis, with an email. And then I'm going to beg every Monday, and I'm gonna let everybody know what kind of monies we've been brought in as time goes on. Right now we've got about $4,000. Next week let's see where we're at. Okay, so. You know, it's been pretty successful in a sense that the money's been coming in, okay. But you know, again, you know, the $5,000 we've already accomplished, we've gotten for this case, and that was really given by one person. So the $4,000 is by quite a few people, mostly $50, okay. So we did have a person that gave $1,000. I sent the thank you note to them by email, most people have given $50, though. But let's keep this going, this $50 thing, and let's get the sheriff program off and going. So, okay, with that, we're going to move over to Brent. Brent, are you here? I see he's coming in twice on a number. What's going on with that? That's weird. Brent, unmute yourself. Okay.
Yes, I'm
so
here.
What we'll do, I guess we'll just let the other Brent sit in here. Hi, Jan. You're in here twice, Brent. But you're on the phone, same phone number twice, but we're not having any problems, so it's working out okay. All right, let me We're going to move over to Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent is going to talk and teach us something tonight. Go right ahead, Brent.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the opportunity. My comments are mine, and my points of view are mine, and mine alone. I don't claim anybody else has this point of view. Don't speak for National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to ask me to say a few words. I like to talk about things that we both deem important, the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of 76. We went through, over a number of weeks, the Declaration of 76, and I thought, well, we'll just keep going right into the Constitution of the United States, clause by clause and blow by blow. I wanted to go to this first, right back. We did cover this, but I thought I ought to say this about that phrase, we the people. That's the opening phrase to our Constitution, also the opening phrase to the preamble of our Constitution. And people have pointed out that the phrase, we the people, is grammatically incorrect. It ought to say, some people say, it ought to say, us the people, us the people. And I'll leave it up to the grammar Nazis to decide. You've got to include, though, when you make this decision, whether that's right or not. You've got to go down to where it says do, ordain, and establish, because all those lines after we the people, and then of the United States, beginning with in order to form a more perfect union, right on through down to, well, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide the common defense, to promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, comma, do, ordain. So it's we the people of the United States do ordain. Or should it say us the people? Well, if it doesn't need to say us the people and we the people is okay, it's okay, even though it maybe is not grammatically correct. It is used as a attention-arresting device to get people's attention. It's like Abe Lincoln saying in the Gettysburg Address. He begins with 67 years ago. Well, nobody at that time talked like that. And people don't talk like that today. But he decided that when he opened it, he'd say that to arrest attention. And he got away with it. 67 years ago. That's 87 years. A score would be 20. But it was a device of attention arresting. That could be what's going on here. Something that's seldom mentioned. But it doesn't hurt to look at some of those details and see what they're trying to do. They did try to write it in such a way. Even if it's bad grammar, we know what they mean when they say people. It's not like it's not understandable. Well, we got down here, not very far. I was talking about the preamble. I'd said a few weeks ago that if the preamble of the Constitution of the United States were likened to a ring of gold, and the things it mentions, the reasons for establishing the Constitution, form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. If the preamble were a ring of gold, and all of those things it says there were jewels on the ring of gold, the biggest jewel in that suite of jewels would be ensure domestic tranquility. Now that phrase is packed pregnant with meaning to the folk that read it in that day. Because what it's talking about is what came to be called peace, P-E-A-C-E. And a common law, and this is a common law document, it is in compact draft, a brief of common law government. It was the words of Justice Taft of the U.S. Supreme Court. It's only understood in the terms of the common law. Its phrases are common law phrases. Then this phrase, ensure domestic tranquility, is a common law phrase, and what it refers to is peace. Because at common law, every man had his peace. P-E-A-C-E. Not the other kind of peace that's spelled different. That's a naval terminology, meaning a gun, whether it be a deck gun or a rifle or a musket or a M16 or an M1, naval terminology calls those pieces. But this is P-E-A-C-E, and every man has his piece of common law, still true today. You can't change it. It's part of the laws of nature. Ensure domestic tranquility refers to that peace. Now, common law in old England, in the old country, from whence our common law came, should say it came through that country, but immediately to us, it came from that country. Everyone in the kingdom, in the realm, had their peace. Even the King of England had his peace. And to violate his peace was a crime. The peace of the king. Well, to violate the peace of a man, which was a different jurisdiction in every case, but still he had it, he had his jurisdiction, and to violate that was actionable in court. What does it mean to violate the peace of another man? Well, two things I'd want to bring out. Number one, to start, what is the definition of peace? Jesus Christ said, for instance, I do not give you peace as the world gives, but I give you my peace. And in the Old Testament, of course, he's talking about that well-known word shalom. And peace in the Old Testament, this can be shown in many different ways. Peace is not the absence of war. Shalom is not the absence of war. It is the presence of tranquility. It's the presence, I should say, tranquility, of order. That's what tranquility is. Order. What order? Not the order of the evil world order. No. That brings all sorts of chaos and despair. But the order of the Creator. As is said, the peace of God is to order one's life according to the orders of the God of all order. God has ordered his creation according to his order, and the only problem in that creation, the only thing out of order, is mankind. And it is his law, the laws of nature, as our Declaration of 76 puts it, the laws of nature written in the nature of things and the laws of nature of God written in the Bible, Lex Scripta, quoting also William Blackstone from the first volume of his commentaries. That is what brings peace to the individual, and that is his peace. This thing about domestic tranquility is not the spinning off of words. They're high-sounding words. For most people, domestic tranquility, that's two words. When they hear them, they sound pretty. They give you a nice feeling, but they pop like a balloon in your head, and then there's empty sound. That's all that's left, because most people don't stop to consider what it means. It's not put in there for nothing. Domestic tranquility is the key to liberty. Well, that's what peace is. Peace is not the absence of war and violence. Peace, as God defines it, and as they understood it at common law, peace is the presence of order. Now watch me. The presence of order in the midst of battle. Fundamentally, that's what it means. And I can show that clearly by the use of the word of shalom, and that's what Jesus Christ was talking about in the New Testament. He was a Hebrew-speaking man, an Israelite, and he understood shalom as Semitic people do. The Arabs, Semitic people, they say salam. They have the same understanding. By the way, drop a footnote here. When the Islamic man says that his religion is a religion of peace, he really believes that because he understands peace in the sense of that cognate language of Hebrew, Arabic. Shalom or salam, they'd say salam. The Hebrew says shalom, it's a softer S, same word, same root, as closely related as Portuguese and Spanish. When he says that, he says my religion, my my Islam is a religion of peace. What he means by that is this. I'm at war. My life is a life of warfare. Everything I do is calculated to dominate the other fella. But my life is in order with the order of Muhammad, who taught us what warfare was. And we have salam in battle. And that's the way all competition is. What's the object of warfare? The object of warfare is to maintain order, chain of command and order, while you're destroying the order of the other army or the other military establishment. If you maintain order, you have what the Bible calls shalom, domestic tranquility. Don't think that we'll ever not have enemies. Our country has enemies now. They have always had enemies. They have been in and among us. They have been around us. We've even met the enemy, and he is us, as they used to say, because we're foolish enough to be sucked in to the lies of religion, law, and government, and what the evil empire wants us to think about religion, law, and government. We are at war. We will always be at war. We have enemies domestic. We have enemies at foreign. We will always have those, and because we will always have those, God calls us to order. And whoever maintains order in warfare wins, period. Numbers don't even mean anything. You say, well, we're not a majority of the Americans. We're not in the high numbers. That doesn't make any difference. If we have domestic tranquility with ourselves, if we have ordered our lives according to the order of the God of all order, we will annihilate the enemy. And the weapons of our warfare is true law. The only law remedy to lawlessness is true law. What is true law? It is order. And that is domestic tranquility. You want peace for your life? Boy, it's a good feeling to have it, too, by the way. Not to mention you get to win. Not to mention you know you're going to win if you can maintain that order. And the evil empire will do everything that it possibly can, every trick in its bag of tricks, every wile, W-I-L-E, that it can pull out to trick you, to hornswoggle you, to force you, to intimidate you, to, just for a moment, abandon the law of the true lawgiver. The laws of nature, the way things are in the nature of things, and they will not change, the laws of nature's God, which undergird the law of nature, by the way, they're both mutually consistent one with another. Learning those laws, those first principle standards, and following them in the simplest way in your own life, and you will be, as the Newer Testament says, same thing, an overcomer. That's the old English way of saying that Latin word victor. Victor, victory. Nakao in the Greek New Testament. You'll be an overcomer. So just wanted to focus on that one there, that one thing in the preamble. Powerful concepts. When you chew them like cud, you begin to see. And just look into the history of that one concept of domestic tranquility, that common law. And then, of course, we distinguish between providing for defense and promoting welfare, general welfare. General means applicable to all. An interesting word. It's ignored and thrown around like cordwood. But general welfare means welfare that applies to everybody. It does not mean you pick, and promotion is different than providing, by the way. Providing for common defense. We're talking about money, paying soldiers and sailors, paying for dockyards and military fortifications, weapons. And the Constitution talks about the duty of Congress to provide. That means give up the money. That means buy what is needed. Promotion is different. Promote the general welfare. Number one, it must be the general welfare. Any welfare of the general government, as our forebears used to call it, they didn't call it the federal government. They called it the general government. Why? Because what happened with that government had a different jurisdiction than the state government. So it was a very limited jurisdiction, still supposed to be. But everything that general government did was to apply to everybody equally, no favorites, and the welfare that is promoted in America by this general government must be a general welfare. It must not distinguish or discriminate between one person and another. But here's what we're doing now. We're violating both of these words. We're not promoting. The general government's not promoting. It's providing. And it's not doing it generally for everybody. It's doing it specifically for this group and that. If you're this, 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 you get that, that, that. If you're a coal miner, you get these benefits. If you're a railroad retiree, you get these benefits from the federal government. And that's just the tip. If you're a farmer, and there's fewer and fewer of those every year, but if you're a farmer, you get these benefits, and they're substantial, by the way. If you're a tobacco grower, it used to be you'd get this or that. If you produce oil, you get these benefits, tax-free this and tax-free that. I think that's still true. Well, that's where we've strayed, and that's our problem. We're not sticking to the law. Talking about having a constitutional convention, don't let people even discuss it in your presence. Every time, and John brought this out, every time there's been something added to the Constitution, I can't point to one thing that's been added to our Constitution that's been good. We say, well, what about the amendment against slavery? Has that helped the slave? Did it help the slave, number one? No. He was in worse shape afterwards because he was turned out. He didn't have any means of support. He had no property, no money. Nobody would pay him. He was a second-class citizen as far as the states were concerned. Didn't help. And his descendants hasn't helped them much either. If you don't believe it, go to downtown St. Louis. Go to the prisons. Go to the federal prisons, the state prisons. Who's it filled with? The descendants of those slaves. It didn't help. And at that time, slavery was eradicated. The Emancipation Proclamation had been put out. The slaveholding states weren't holding their slaves anymore. They weren't telling the slaves, a lot of them had already run away. By the thousands. And a lot of the states were in the process before the war, and it was going to take over, of releasing all their slaves by law. Well, what about the right to vote for women? That was unnecessary. That was nothing but a foolish promotion. Why do I say that? Listen to me close. Because the states had already begun doing that in spades, state by state. Beginning with the southern states and the western states, by the way, the New England states wouldn't do it. They were supposed to be the free thinkers. They were supposed to be the ones that were smarter, that the intellectuals, the industrial Northeast. They didn't do it. Why didn't they do it? Because in the western and the southern states, women owned property. They owned farmland and ranch land. And it was part of their inheritance sometimes. But the agrarian society had already given the right, not giving it to them, but they said you can have it. What I'm saying is the constitutional amendment was nothing but a promotion. It was the federal government saying, oh, yeah, we're in the bandwagon too. And then you point to the 17th Amendment. What about the income tax amendment? Has that helped us along? The 13th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment. I don't see that any of those amendments you could talk about all. What about the amendment that gives the right to vote to 18-year-olds? Has that really been helpful? Or is voter fraud up or down now? Has it changed the color of our country, the color, the shade of our politics? I think that's pretty questionable. Shucks, a man 50 years old most of the time doesn't have enough sense to vote for what's right. Why would a boy 18 years old? Well, what I'm pointing out is if you have a constitutional amendment, you say, well, I can find something been added to the Constitution that's been good. Okay, so by happenstance you find one out of 50, one out of 25, one out of 26. What's the chances of having a constitutional convention and not destroying these common law first principles? Don't listen to that kind of talk. God help us, we shouldn't ever do something like that. We've got a common law document. It's a good one. And the things that don't apply, if there's something that doesn't apply, there are things in our Constitution that don't apply. The provisions about 3/5 of the population being counted for purposes of representation. Well, that had to do with slaves that lived in the slave states. that's not applicable anymore. Do we need an amendment to say so? No, we don't need an amendment. We don't have one. Has it hurt us? No. And the wonderful thing about our common law, in every court of our land is capable of answering any questions, anything that any problem left to contingency, anything not legislated on, the courts are free to give a remedy. As a matter of fact, they have their duty bound. Where no remedy at law is provided, where the legislature hasn't spoken, the courts are duty bound because they're common law courts in America. Whether they admit it or not, whether they act like it or not, the common law is enforced in America. And where there is no remedy by legislation, the courts are bound to provide one, to fashion one. And if that doesn't work, you can appeal it if you don't think it's right. Well, let's get down here. We left off last time. We talked about Roman law and the analogy of a corporation. Is the federal government a corporate body? Well, for certain purposes it is, and always has been. That's true. For certain purposes, the federal government is a corporate body. You know that a corporate charter is always granted from a greater to a lesser, from the sovereign to somebody else. That's why you get corporate charters from your local state if you want to incorporate in that state. And the Secretary of State signs off on it. The legislature has passed a bill. If you want to incorporate, you submit your request with your paperwork to the Secretary of State. He signs off on it. You give up certain things. Your corporation becomes a person in contemplation of law. All of those things. But the governments, so the states and the federal government, the courts, when they go into court, when they're sued or sue somebody, or when a state sues somebody, or somebody sues a state, et cetera, the courts, for purposes of litigation, view the governments often as corporations. I was fascinated, didn't know this, I was running for United States Congress. A problem arose. Had to do with campaign financing. And I got to reading the regulations, and I discovered that the campaign organization, the name of the organization was Winters for Congress. We didn't incorporate that organization. Had hundreds, thousands maybe of people that belonged to it. I don't know. I mean, anybody that would have donated would have, I guess, been part of it. But when there was a dispute, the agencies that handled the dispute look at that organization as a corporation. It is a corporation for purposes of federal law. And it's never been incorporated. No request was made to any state or the federal government. That happens more often than a fellow realizes. And a government's viewed as corporations, even though they aren't, really. They have never been given a charter. They aren't a person in contemplation of law by charter. But still, the courts have always looked at them that way, because they can't think of any other way to make it work in the courts, but to view them as a person, a corporate body. I like to call them, when they're just a corporation, I like to call them corpses, because that's what they are. They're dead persons, dead, although the law says they're alive. Matter of fact, they don't even exist, but the law says they exist. They're fictions. I don't know that that's always such a good idea. Matter of fact, I'd say that, as mentioned a while ago, a common law trust will do more than a corporation if it's structured right, and that's all very possible. And corporations become dangerous. Corporations become golems. You say, what's a golem? Well, go to the internet and look it up. I won't tell you what a golem is because I want you to go to look. But a golem is a fake person that does evil deeds, and you can hide behind him and say, I didn't do that. Well, that's what a corporation is. You see, when people sue the federal government is, in contemplation of the courts often, a person. But you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't touch it. And then the people that act under the authority of that false person, they do things that are wrong or step outside of the scope of their power or the scope of any lawful power, even though the government may say they can do it, like the Nazis did, of course. A lot of governments do that. But at the same time, it is people. Maybe recall that the fellow running for president, and when it comes to politicians, they're forgotten pretty quickly. Romney, his name was Romney, I couldn't think of his name, the Mormon fellow. He made the comment once, he said in passing, in response to a question at a meeting, he said, people, or corporations are just people. Because people were saying, you're a recipient of the largesse of corporations. He said, corporations are just people. Well, what he meant by that was there is nothing there but a fiction, a corpse. He was maligned unceasingly for saying that. And I'm not defending him. I didn't particularly support him. Matter of fact, I didn't support him at all because he was a supporter of Obamacare, and he put it in place when he was governor of, I think it was Massachusetts or something. He put the same kind of a system in place as governor. But his point was well taken. I knew what he meant by what he said. Corporations consist of an arrangement of relationships of men and property. They're people. In that sense, it's true. But the corporation itself is not a person. It's a fiction. It's a corpse. It's deader than a hammerhead. And that is dangerous. It becomes the pharmaceutical companies in America, the corporations, but the pharmaceutical companies. They become golems. Golems. Banks become what I like to call golems. You say, how do you spell that? I don't know. I think it's spelled differently in different ages and centuries. I think it's G-O-L-L-U-M. That's close enough. If you type that in, you'll find out what a golem is, and that's what I think the corporation pretty much is. Well, the grievances, which our Declaration of 76 complains about, have been decided according to the demands of common law due process through trial by battle. Instead of battle by trial, we tried battle by trial on several fronts. The case that went before the courts, the British courts in America, about the writs of assistance, argued by James Otis. James Otis, what a fellow. When he argued that case, Sam Adams later said, then and there, when James Otis argued the writs of assistance before the royal courts in Massachusetts, then and there, at that very time, was conceived the baby called the United States. The writs of assistance. Well, James Otis understood a lot of things that had been forgotten. Whatever the writs of assistance, well, that was all about our Fourth Amendment, the right against an unwarranted search and seizure of your home, of your body, of your car. That's what that case was about. He fought it in court. And then, there was the cases, plural, that John Adams fought, trying to, even defending British soldiers, the British soldiers that had killed, I believe it was five people at the Boston Massacre. But none of those things worked. Of course, we'd sent petitions back in 1775 to England. None of that worked, so it ended up, because they wouldn't back off, that instead of battle by trial before the jury, it was trial by battle. And by this result, the right accrued to the Americans to settle the peace. What is peace? And there's that word again. What is the order? Just substitute the word order. To settle the order, the order of the arrangement of affairs between them and the British in separation from Britain. Accordingly, our Constitution, by the words of its preamble, settles a perpetual common law trust by declaration, its settlers declaring themselves initial trustees while providing for the process of appointing successor trustees in the body of the trust document. That's one way to look at our Constitution, and I think it's even a better way to look at our Constitution than a corporate charter, because it is an entrustment. A corporate charter only bespeaks a contract relationship. A trust bespeaks a fiduciary relationship. There are only two kinds of relationships our common law recognizes. And within those two categories, all relationships fall according to the contemplation of our common law. One of them is the contract relationship, which is arm's length, buyer beware applies, you look out for yourself and I'll look out for myself. Caveat emptor the old phrase that's used, buyer beware. When you buy something on contract and it isn't what you thought it was, you lose because you didn't take the time to look out for yourself and look out for your own interests. That's a contract relationship. That's what corporations are all about. That's what bankers are all about. But then a trust relationship, that's fiduciary. Fiduciary. That means the Latin word. Fidus means faithfulness. It means brotherly faithfulness. Maybe you remember or you heard the motto of the Marine Corps, always faithful, semper fi. It's Latin for always, semper, semper, always, fi, faithful. That's the same fi of fiduciary. Faithfulness. Faithfulness to what? Faithfulness to your trust. That means faithfulness to somebody other than yourself. At contract law, you're required to be faithful to yourself. That's what makes the world of business go round, is faithfulness to yourself. What about the relationship we call marriage? Well, now, wait, that's different. You're married? Now, you've got a legal duty toward your spouse. Not a contract duty. No, marriage is not a contract. Marriage is a fiduciary relationship at common law. And at the Bible, I might add. And you're to look out for your spouse's interest more than your own. And if need be, as the Bible even says, lay down your life for your wife. It's a high standard. That's a fiduciary relationship. So marriage is a fiduciary relationship. What about fathers and children? Or mothers and children? Again, a fiduciary relationship. A parent is required by law or common law to act only in the interest of their child, never to act against the interest of the child, as long as they're guardian of their child. A guardian relationship, there's another one. Even if it isn't your child or it's somebody else, that's a fiduciary relationship. You must act within the scope of that relationship for the good of the other person always, even to your own detriment. What about God's relationship with man? Well, there's a good one. There's a good one. The Bible says that in his relationship to his people, God, he will act even, he says, to my own hurt. I'm quoting the Bible, even to my own hurt. Well, how much hurt did he take on for his people? Well, he gave himself up for brutal torture and then allowed him to be taken, stripped naked, and nailed to a post, half beat to death, till he died. That's to his own hurt. He did that not for himself. He did that for his people. That's a fiduciary relationship. So our Constitution of the United States establishes, in my studied opinion, it has all the markings of it, a trust relationship. I'll go through the basics of what a trust is, the indispensable elements that must be there, and then I'll quit. There's just a few here. Our Constitution preamble provides the three certainties indispensable to the settlement of a common law trust. The settlement of a common law trust. Number one, the preamble provides a certainty of intent to entrust rights and property, or property and rights, for the benefit of another. That's the first certainty. There are three certainties of a trust at common law. Intent to establish, to entrust rights and property for the benefit of another. Number two, it establishes a certainty of rights in the property entrusted, enabling clear identification and distinction from other property. And number three, it provides a certainty of beneficiaries of the entrusted property. So three things a trust at common law requires: a certainty of intent, a certainty of property and rights, or rights and property, same thing, and a certainty of identification of beneficiaries of this entrusted property and rights. Is this good law? Well, consider it's good evidence. Until recent decades, our Constitution of the United States was not on display in that archive building in Washington, D.C. Now, they say that one that's in that encasement there is the original. I have no evidence that would lead me to believe that's true, because the government says it. When the government says something, you got to be pretty suspect. Now, if it is or it isn't, doesn't make any difference. As far as its efficacy and its power is concerned and its lawfulness and its good law, it is good law. But nonetheless, they make it look like, and this is good if it is real, that they protect it very much. They tell me, I've been there and looked at it, they tell me that if you took a 12-pound sledge and came down on top of that glassy-looking thing that covers the Constitution of the United States there, it wouldn't hurt it at all. They protect it very well, and they've got it so they can punch a button, and it goes down to the ground pretty deep in case of a nuclear attack or fire or terrorism. They protect it. Why do they protect it? We've got millions of copies of it all over the world, official copies, unofficial copies. Why do they protect that? Well, because that is a trust document. It is a document, watch this, that evidences the entrustment of rights. The entrustment of rights. To whom are our rights entrusted? Well, they're entrusted to us for our progeny, the ones that come after us. They're also entrusted to us as jurors. They're entrusted to us as potential officers of government, legislators, governors, presidents, and certainly they're entrusted to those folk that hold those offices. Everything from the county coroner, the sheriff, right on up to the state governor, the legislators, the judges that sit on the benches are all entrusted with protecting these rights and property, this property and rights. Remember, you have property in your rights. And any tangible property you have rights in that property. The two are interchangeable. Property are rights, and rights are property. And those have been entrusted to each of us in different situations and different circumstances as Americans, whether we be in office or out. And it is a fiduciary duty. Does a judge have a fiduciary duty to those before the court? You bet he does. Does a lawyer with his client, by the terms of the law in our common law country, a common lawyer, does he have a fiduciary duty? That means his relationship to his client? Yes. What is a lawyer? An attorney. That means, it's an old word. It means agent. He is an agent. Is an agent a fiduciary duty? Yes. By the way, a real estate agent, that's a fiduciary relationship according to our law. Insurance agent, that's a fiduciary relationship according to our law. Every time you hear the word agent, FBI agent, CIA agent, every time you hear the word agent, our law holds the person who holds that agency to a higher standard. What is it? It's a standard that says he must only act when he acts within the scope of his agency for the benefit of somebody else. Don't miss this. Even if it's to his own detriment. I've known trustees of trusts, and the beneficiaries have come after them to destroy them, taken them to court, called them every name in the book, and every lawyer ought to know that in a case like that, the trustee may be mad, he may be upset, but our law says he must still act. He must continue to act, even if the beneficiary is trying to kill him. The law says he must act with respect to that trust relationship for the benefit and only for the benefit of the beneficiary. Well, that's what our Constitution, I believe, is. It's not a corporation, it's a trust. Thanks, John, Gerard, or whoever's there. Back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate that. Before we take callers, I just want to bring another point up, again, proving the fact that the people are not qualified to discuss and debate any changes in our Constitution at all. And just consider this, okay? Barack Obama ran for president, okay? I don't believe he's a United States citizen. I believe he was born in a different country. And to a father who was not an American citizen, even if he was born in Hawaii, he still didn't qualify to become elected president of the United States because he was not a natural born citizen. How many people understand that? How many people in Congress or in office anywhere And they didn't bring it up during the time when he ran. How many news media people understood that? You know? So the question becomes, you know, that's a problem, okay? The other thing is let's take Cruz, okay? Ted Cruz has dual citizenship. He's got divided, concerns. He's both a Canadian and an American citizen. But he's not natural born either. His father was born in Cuba, and he became a citizen in the United States in 1973. But that was after Ted Cruz was born. So Ted Cruz was not a natural born citizen, and Ted Cruz was born in Canada, and again to a father who was a citizen of Cuba. His mother was an American citizen. And nobody brought this up during his run for president, for him or Obama. Nobody understands. I've heard a little talk about natural-born citizen, and they didn't even understand what that meant, what it means. So, again, it's the same problem comes back, you know. Maybe 20 or 30 years from now, maybe we'll be mature enough, moral enough, educated enough to be able to consider changes to the Constitution. But I think if we achieve those levels, we'll discover there's no need to do anything to the Constitution. And look, we can nullify anything that's repugnant to the Constitution. So as I told the governors, all 50 governors, we the people, you know, through the grand jury, under the label of grand jury, we send notification to these governors and we let them know they have the power to nullify. First of all, it was never ratified. Second of all, it's repugnant to the Constitution. Third of all, it enslaves the state to the federal government. Okay? They had every right to ignore that 17th Amendment. They have every right to call back those senators that have been elected by the people and nullify them, let them know you're not representing this state. You don't have the power or the authority. We have no control over you as a state because, again, it's the balance of power. How many of these people understand the balance of power? You know, I hear every election that they want to go back to, you know, they have this argument or debate or talking about, well, you know, this one got the popular vote, you know, and, you know, even though they won the election, the other one got the popular vote or something of that nature. And again, they have no understanding of the balance of power and how this whole structure was put together, you know. So, again, you know, the president is ultimately to be elected by the states when you really work it out, and the states permit the people to help make that decision in that state. But ultimately it is the state that elects the president, you know, through the – because, you know, if we didn't, then we'd have a president determined by just a couple of cities. Couple of cities, New York City and Los Angeles and numerous other cities in various places, and they can just take the election over, it's done. All the other states are irrelevant if it wasn't that way. How many of these people understand that? Okay, so they don't really have the power. They don't have the authority to be able to make these arguments and debates and to try to discuss that. Hang on a minute. Let me get back to... Okay, anyway. All right, so let's move on to our callers for tonight. Our first caller is Fred. Looks like California Fred. You got the mic. Go ahead, Fred.
Oh, hello, John. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you.
Yes, sir. I wanted to bring up a couple points. You were talking about potential lawsuits who you might want to sue. I was thinking about the Department of Education, where Jefferson's remedy is to teach the common law and civics.
Well, I think we need to get rid of the Department of Education on a federal level anyway. The people need to decide on a local basis the education required for them. The government should, of course, provide to some degree, of course, that education. We have a public school, you know, system set up, but the people should control that on a local basis. So I haven't looked too deep into that, but of course, you know, it's something to be considered on the one hand. But on the other hand, again, if we, once we take the courts back and we start putting our focus now back and taking political power, which can be done very quickly, once you get the judicial power, political power rolls right behind it very quickly. We'll take it, take control like that. And then we get the thing set up where we take control of that political power, and we have the judicial power in every single county, okay? And the people are now educating the people on a lower level, working in the schools to make sure they have a proper education, to have a real education, an education that teaches our children how to think, because they don't do that. You know, we need our children to have a classical education. They don't have that. That's the real education. And so we can bring our schools back in on a local level. All this stuff can be local controlled, and that's where it belongs. Parents bringing in, you know, the required, whatever it is that they require. Now, of course, every school must teach the, you know, the certain basics, you know, and of course included in those basics, you know, mathematics and writing and so on. But included in that mathematics should be a heavy teaching on American history, okay, court process and access, civics as a basic, and of course, you know, the Constitution and the other founding documents. Those are things that need to be addressed very deeply every year in the education of our children. And again, I believe we can go back to an eighth grade level of education, return back there. There's no need for children to go to 12 years. They can learn in 8 years easily the 12 years plus, if it's a real education, if it's a classical education, if it's an education teaching our children how to think and not to be programmed. Because a whole different thing when you can teach a child that they have the power to be and do whatever it is that they want to be and whatever it is that they want to do, and all they need to do is focus and concentrate and understand what they're hearing. I mean, that really is the essence of education. Ultimately, it's the basics. It is where it, you know, what it's all about is just understanding what it is you're doing. And if your children understand what it is that being taught, and they're trained on a way that they should walk and how they should behave, you know, I went to a parochial school when I did go to school, and I dropped out ninth grade, and I never finished ninth grade, and I went. I tried this public school, okay? I was totally blown away. The total disobedience, the disrespect, and that, and we're going back, you know, into the 60s now. I mean, I think it was in the early 60s is when they took prayer out of school, and all that liberal focus and stuff started to take place. But here it is. I go into a public school. I don't think I lasted a week or two. I found it appalling. First of all, I found myself superior in knowledge to them, and I was kind of a dummy coming out of a parochial school. But in any event, no order, total disrespect, and I didn't want to deal with it. I just left altogether. You know, of course, later on in life, I started to realize education was important and got my GED, did a couple of semesters in college, was bored by that because I thought they were moving too slow on the subject matters that I was interested in, and then I just started reading. And I self-educated myself in all the areas that I desired to do so, you know, engineering, you know, construction, management, I also drafting, all of those, self-educated in all those areas, and then, of course, into the political processes and the law, and of course, the law is all about the law of the land, the Constitution, and so on. So, again, you know, it's a matter of believing in yourself, given the opportunity, and getting the attention of the children. The other thing is all our children seem to be drugged. You know, that's another thing. They all seem to be drugged, and, you know, that's a horrible situation. So anyway, we need to bring education back to the people on a local level.
I agree with you, sir, but I want to reiterate the problems in the education system. You mm-hmm. see, they have a, in the Board of Education in the various states, they have hundreds of people who do not teach children. Their only job is to comply with the federal regulations regarding the schools and what they're going to teach.
Parents should fire them.
Look, I'm not trying to argue that. I am trying to
They'll win in court. They'll win in court.
I'm trying to specify, sir, one thing. That is where I believe it was Jefferson who said the remedy was to teach them if they don't know
That's
the common
right.
law. If the federal government has any purpose at all in the school system, it's to enforce Jefferson's writings and teachings. And that's it. And subsidize the local schools for that teaching. That's
right.
what I'm
Look
getting at. So if
yeah,
you're going to sue somebody, I suggest you sue that on that principle.
Well, yeah, I agree. You know, I think once we get to a point where we can see more clearly and have the authority and the power to do something about it, then we can start dealing with that problem. Obviously, we can't deal with this problem at this point because we could never win anything in the courts and we could never win anything in the schools. These teachers are held over. They're not really qualified. But we have an educational crisis. There's no doubt about it. These teachers do not know how to teach. Just to begin with, they, whatever it is they were taught, I don't know, but they were not taught how to teach. Teaching may very well be to some degree something that you have to have a knack for, in a sense. How many good teachers do you really see out there? How many good professors do you really see out there? Just think about this: Obama was a professor, okay? That's what I understand. And what was his major? He had a constitutional major, okay? Just think about that. Okay, let that sink into you for a little bit.
Obama was a shill, sir.
Of course he was. But well, I think most of the teachers are problematic, okay, to begin with.
Many people call Obama, a Manchurian candidate. I would suggest he is a fifth columnist.
No, you'll get no argument from me, okay? But going back, look, we do have an educational crisis, and it may very well be, you know, all of our teachers that we have in schools, they need to be, if I may say so, reprogrammed, to bring them away from their programming and bring them back into a free-thinking mind and a whole new focus on teaching. And I don't know if they can do that.
They can,
again,
because they are members of the school unions.
Right.
And
well, again, I understand that. Look, I understand that completely, but the power of the people can prevail. Okay? The power of the people can prevail. They can nullify the teachers. They can nullify the school. If the parents come together, because it's got to be given back to the people.
All right,
it's got to go back
to
the people.
Okay.
So
if
the local people can mobilize. Now, how do
we
mobilize?
You're talking to the choir. Listen.
But we have a solution. Let me get to the solution.
In your sheriff's handbook, you can specify that the sheriff should approach the school board and insist upon Jefferson's remedy to teach the children common law.
Well, again, I don't think it's the sheriff's job to do that. I think it's the parents' job to do that. How do you get the parents involved?
Where are they going to get the education, sir?
Well, I'm trying to tell you how we have a plan for this. We do have a plan. We have a political side to our website. We do have a plan for this. And the key thing is to take back control of the political process. Taking back the control of the political process means we take back control of the committee man. Okay? When you take back the control of the committee man and you free the committee man and bring them back into the Constitution, because that's where you got to get the education going. These are the people. The people who have become committee men are people who are interested in doing something in their community. Believe me, I was a committee man. I know committee men right now, and they're so disgusted with how the system works. You know, they lose these people. You know, they'll hang out for a couple of years. Maybe they'll go two terms, and they leave in disgust, and then they bring other people. So the attrition rate is enormous. The point is that most of the people, it takes them a little while to see the corruption. And of course, you know, then you get the criminal element that comes in, someone who's kind of criminally minded, leaning towards that way, and then they see the power and how they can make the money and get an upper hand in the community and take control and make some big dollars, and the corruption begins. And the whole system stinks because it's run from the top down and not from the bottom up. You take the people who have the interest, okay, and you educate them. How do we educate them? You bring them to National Liberty Alliance. They take some of these courses that we've got together. You introduce them to the connection with the administrations for the grand jury in every county. And then you teach them how to become an elected committee man. And then you bring out the training and the necessities to go out and educate the community. You see, remember, the people who are in the committee man, I'd say 80% of them, and it may be even higher, okay, but I'd say 80% of the people that are committee men would love to continue. First of all, they're motivated. They want to do something. They want to get involved on the one hand. On the other hand, okay, they're disgusted with what's going on when they start to see how the system really works. But these people have a desire to do something for their community, to do something in the political realms, to bring things back to where it belongs. So if you can educate them, then you can educate.
Yes.
Yes.
Hold on, let me mute you, Jan. Okay. You can, if you can educate them. Okay. They would be so. You know, they would be involved. Okay. And now, what do the committee men do? Remember. As a committee man, when I was a committee man, you know, I had about, let me think the numbers, I had to get 5%. I think it was about 160 people, okay, in my district. That's who I represented, 160 people. Now, I can reach, over the course of a year, I can reach all 160 people, okay? And if we get a program going on educating the parents and the people in the community to get involved in the political process, to become a committeeman themselves, to become educated in the Constitution, to become educated in civics, get involved in what's going on in the schools and so on and so forth, okay? Now, you're not going to get everyone going with you, but you're going to get a large part of the community. And remember, what I think it was Franklin that said, you know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. And we will have enough of the majority participating to take back the control of the schools, to walk into the schools and tell the unions to go to hell, get out of town, whatever you want to do. But if you're going to stay around as a union, stop the nonsense. Stop destroying our children. Stop destroying the education of our children. And you take it to court if you have a problem, and you know the jury will, because you have an educated jury, an informed jury, you know, they're going to make the right decision. And you're going to show the disgust that these people, you know, the problems they create, okay, they'll kick them out. We can win it that way. That way we can win it. Now, it's going to take time.
I have two other suggestions, sir,
yeah.
With all due respect. Tim Allen at InfoWars has opened up two new platforms.
Tim Allen, the comedian and actor?
No, not that idiot, no.
Okay.
He,
I don't know that he's an idiot. I've heard him talk from his conservative perspective, but I don't know enough, maybe. But go ahead.
Well, the court jester. Okay. Anyway, censored.news.
Yeah. What about it?
Censored.news and real.video. Now, YouTube censors stuff. And I tell you, you're watching a video and you get interruptions because the minions are working at it.
Right.
So have your tech guy, what's his name again?
Carl.
Yeah, Carl. No disrespect, I have a poor memory. But real.video, have him check that out. It might be a real good program to get in there right now and post your videos at NLA.
Uh-huh.
So you don't go away when YouTube decides to pull a plug. And censored.news might be a real good location for Ollie to do a backup on his, and NLA can do backups on all of their recordings.
Mm-hmm.
That is...
All right, well, we'll take a serious look into that. I know when whatever I post up on YouTube, I have a copy on my hard drive. So, I mean, I do have a backup of everything I've ever created or posted. And, it is good to have a place where you can get the backup online and also a place where, you know, you're not going to be shut down.
I've noticed a lot of the Trump speeches on YouTube. Whenever uh-huh. Trump starts talking about something that you really want to hear, the sound either distorts or skips to another area.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that.
I mean,
I know that there are problems. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
I mean,
another way that the left is in there fidgeting with things like your computer and whatever. Well, I don't want to waste a lot of time. I wanted to make those points, and you've addressed the education thing.
We do have to do something with the education. Obviously, we can't sue now, and again, suits could take place when we're on the other side and we control the judiciary, where we can get just courts who will make the proper just decisions. Then it could be introduced into the courts. But a lot of this can be corrected and dealt with, locally. You know, the parents, they take control. They can just tell the union to leave. Look at teachers, you could leave too. C'est la vie. We'll go in and teach until we can find teachers qualified. I mean, whatever it takes, we got to get rid of this communistic, agenda in our schools.
One other thing, sir. I have spent some time with Jan explaining to him what I brought up last Monday about the federal claims court. I think he's on the same page now with what I was trying to get across.
Well, I did look into that, okay? In that court, it seems that they have done away with all those things. But all those things that they've done away with are still here in the rules of court on the other side of things, on the federal district courts. All that stuff is still there.
But the federal claims court is the real court. You're supposed to address constitutional questions.
Well, no, I disagree with that. Look, I'll tell you why. The federal district courts are the place for that. And I'll tell you why. And this is why. When they set up the court system in the United States, the whole thing, they wanted to make sure that there was access to a court every so many miles or, you know, travel time. And I think it was
Sir, how many of these courts are seated on federal property?
Well, isn't the building federal property?
That's the big question. No, they're renting.
I'm not sure I understand. Make the point.
How many of them are seated on federal property? District of Columbia is 10 by 10 square miles of federal property.
Right.
That's what I'm getting at.
But federal property is also any building or any kind of a structure, docks, ammunition, what do they call that? Places where ammunition might be stored, things like that. All of that falls under the federal law and is considered federal property.
Okay, so you're saying those forms still exist, huh?
I'm saying, the forms still exist in the rules. I looked through form to form. I made a lot of notes when you were talking, and I went in and I saw that they were discontinued. Gerard did a study on it. And we discovered that, a lot of this stuff is gone. But when I went into the federal court system to look into the rules and stuff to see, all of these things were there. They were still in the federal rules. And again, there's some good stuff in the federal rules.
But they all proceed under civil law. That's the big problem.
Right, that is the problem. Well, that's the battle.
For common law.
But that's the battle.
I see. Okay, I'm not going to waste our battle.
That's exactly what we're fighting.
More time, sir. You have made your point abundantly.
Okay.
I'll yield now.
Appreciate it.
Hey, John, Crystal has some information that she'd like to get out tonight.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll mute Fred, and we'll take the next caller after Crystal. Go ahead.
Okay, Crystal, you're on. Crystal?
Well, you sure she's unmuted? She looks still muted to me.
Hello?
Go right ahead, Crystal. You got it. And by the way, next time, if you have something, an announcement or some important information, and this goes for anybody, you can call Jan prior to the program. You can find his number under the directory at National Liberty Alliance, and we'll try to get you in at the beginning of the program.
Okay, yeah. All right, hi. All right, Saturday, Sunday, and today, we were on Channel 12 News with Richard Blumenthal about the illegal foreclosures, and it's been blown through the roof. I was speaking, and we had a group of people that have been in the court, and the phone, so other TV segments want to pick it up now. They're going to be following through on this, and I told them, I was telling everybody, well, they go, we want to join your group. I said, I'm in LA, you know. And people, because they all have the exact same concern, make sure all the information you have, send it to Richard Blumenthal, Congress, okay? And the interview is with him, you know. And thank you, because we basically, why are they sitting there taking people's homes illegally? Who's the injured party? It turned out great. Okay.
Right.
Please make sure I got the phone number, the address, and everything, all that information. There's one other thing. Yes, you're right. Everybody needs to write, contact their Congress and all that, because this is election and you know what? And different ones, they didn't even want to hear about it. You know what I'm saying? Because, like you said, most of them are all attorneys, so they know what's going on. And I said, who's the injured party? And the only ones who are being, I said, it's not affecting their life. So I said, whose life is it being disrupted? I said, the attorneys and the judges, they all can go home and go to sleep, what have you. And so today I was supposed to be in the court. I didn't make it because I said, but come to find out that judge, he wasn't even there. And so the attorneys and all the rest of them, I mean, they've been showing it on the hour. Every half hour, they were running this. So, I mean, it was very explosive. And I said, wow, you know. And
while you were talking, I got blacked out for a minute or so, and then I came back in. But I think what you're saying is you basically got the information, you got it to Jan, and that we should call up to be interviewed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or you've been interviewed? And
I've been interviewed. I'm on TV, okay? And it's about all the illegal foreclosures. We had our group of people, the people that was been in court with us, I called them, we rounded them all up, we were there, and Richard Blumenthal, Congressman Senator Blumenthal, was there down at City Hall, and it's all recorded. We were on Channel 12, okay? And they've been running it since Saturday up till today, you know? And so, I mean, it's been great, great publicity. And they're like, so I was telling even the young people, college, all of them, and I said, everybody needs to learn that, you know, I told them, I gave them the website, National Liberty Alliance and stuff like that. And, and I spoke at another segment for the education today. And I said, and this is what should be a part of the school system. So, you know, we're getting people signed up and everything else with NLA. And also,
right,
as I said, please contact your congressman. You know, right now it's election time, but all the people want to know, and I'll be going to court tomorrow morning. Because also the amendment for foreclosures and all that, the executive order, which I sent you from December 21st, I think there was another one, June 18th, they can't do anything because the judges are not even signing off. And then they said that 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st executive order were all foreclosures are supposed to stop. I didn't find it, but please check the executive order that Trump signed off on all this. So they're not even supposed to be going through with the foreclosures now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I mean, that's what I wanted to share with you. But please, because he's right up there. He's like number – he's always on every TV station, Richard Blumenthal. So please make sure him, Murray, and, you know, and the rest of them will all get this, you know, for the
okay.
NLA. Okay. Because what are they
going to
say right now? And so everybody's like, and he goes, oh, we're going to stop these foreclosures and the veterans and all this other stuff. So, hey, you know what? It's on TV now. Okay.
Okay. All right. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And you
all
can
right.
go on
Thanks
the website, you know, and I sent you all the papers that I sent over. That will be helpful to you, too, what
okay.
I've been following through. Okay. All righty.
All right.
Night.
Appreciate it, Crystal. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. We'll go to our next caller in a minute. I remember now what I had forgotten before, and that was that I wanted to ask anybody that has the time, and someone should be able to find the time. We're looking for state constitutions. If you go out to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and you go under education, and you click, you highlight founding documents, and you come down to state constitutions. You'll see, I believe we have 21 state constitutions here. Obviously, we lack 29 more. So we need the missing constitutions. Now, some people have sent us, you know, links to websites where we can read the Constitution. But you can't really get it in PDF on these websites. So what you had to do is search for, you know, your state constitution and then put PDF on it so you get a PDF copy. But we do need the other 29 copies, you know, of state constitutions. The other thing we need, and we need to create a page for in our political side and probably right here on the educational side anyway, is a copy of election law. Okay. We need a copy. In New York we have New York election law. But we need a copy of election law in every state, whatever the state election law is. Now, state election law has nothing to do with rules or anything of that nature. We're looking for the actual statutes, election law that's created by the state Congress. Not that which is created by the committeemen, which are not committeemen at all. And it's those rules are controlled by a few people who've created those rules. And so anyway, anybody that please get some time and look to see if we have your state constitution. And once we start pulling in the election law in your state, we'll start posting that too, probably in the same place. We'll put it, let's see, you go to education, founding documents, okay, and where you see state constitutions, probably in there we'll put state election law somewhere in there, so you click on that and be able to see the PDF copies of that. But both of them have to be in PDF copies. It's extremely important they be in PDF copies. Don't send us a web link to go to a website to look at it, because usually we can't get it. And it, you know, and if it could be downloaded, people should just download it in PDF and get it over to Jan, okay? And again, you can find Jan's contact information under the directory on National Liberty Alliance. Okay, let's get back to our callers here. Next question. Let's see who we got next. I think I kicked someone out. I'm not sure. What happened here?
I'm here.
Who's this?
This is
Felicia.
Here. How are you?
Mm-hmm. How you doing, Felicia? Go right ahead.
All right. I have a simple question tonight. Are all statutes considered law? And if so, how do they stand up against the Constitution?
All lawful statutes are law. Okay. If you go into Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, there's a listing of 18 powers given to Congress. And of those 18 powers, one of them says that they have the authority and the power to write all necessary law for all of those powers. And so whatever powers we've given them, and they've also got the power and the authority to write law to control that. As I was talking a little earlier, for instance, there's real estate law out there. And if the law is a problem, well, then we have to battle to fix it. If it's repugnant to the Constitution, then you can make that point and win that in a court of justice. You're not going to win it in today's courts, but you'll win it in a court of justice. Their statutes are made for commerce, okay, commercial activities, and many, many other things. Also, law statutes are written also for, becoming how a person becomes a citizen. They write all law for that. So there are a lot of statutes out there that are law for certain things, okay? Now, when it comes to we the people, okay, and we're not participating in commercial or maybe construction business or anything of that nature, we're not dealing in the business world, but we're just dealing in the people world where we the people, well, they have no power or authority to write statutes concerning our controlling us. That's where the difference is, okay? And that's where the violation is. Any statute controlling my behavior is null and void. And, you know, look, they can get rid of so much crimes and so much problems and so much drug abuse just by legalizing it all and controlling it. A, they'll make money, okay, so they could tax it and they can make money. It could be sold like it's sold in, you know, a liquor store or any place that sells that kind of stuff. And what will this accomplish? Well, first of all, it'll accomplish a huge, huge reduction in the introduction of especially hard drugs, but even the light drugs, in our schoolyards, to our school children. Why? Because the pusher pushes the dope. That, you know, they're also their own mouthpiece in the sense of advertisement. They'll give them some free stuff and, you know, get them high and do things and get them mixed up with other people partying, and next thing you know, they got a new customer. Well, all of that will disappear if you legalize it. All of these terrible wars and different things going on between the different, people who are involved in this, cartels or whatever it is, and all of that stuff will disappear. Bringing all of this stuff illegally into our country will all disappear. You put it under the control. And then what do? We educate our children in the dangers and the seriousness of using these kind of things. People shouldn't be using these drugs. Now, you know, look, people use, for instance, they may use wine or some kind of a hard alcohol or drink beer. Well, pot's no different than that. As a matter of fact, it's much safer than any of those things. You know, all that stuff will do as much damage to you if you abuse it enough. It'll destroy your liver, your kidneys, and other things. And even more so, or just as much, as putting a needle in your arm and getting stuck on that stuff. Now, of course, putting a needle in your arm and taking that drugs is serious, and it's a serious problem that will cause all kinds of problems, medical problems, and especially in the future, you know, brittle bones and different things like that. And then when you get old, you wish you didn't do that when you were younger. Nevertheless, it's better off controlling it, giving it to people. You stop the advertising and the pushing of this stuff on our children. You train them up, and before you know it, you have a society that moves more away from that kind of stuff than towards that kind of stuff. You know, give our children the ability to you train them up in morality. You train them up in spiritual things. You train them up in law, which brings you right back under God, okay? You train them up there, and they'll be satisfied in life, okay? People who take drugs usually are not satisfied, and they're not happy with their state of mind, so to speak, and so they get high a lot, you know? I know a lot of alcoholics. Yeah. A lot of them are dead from alcohol. I know a lot of drug addicts. I know a lot of them dead from drugs. And a lot of people, yeah, come from the Bronx, and I was around people who were in all kinds of this stuff, and a lot of them are dead. You know, I'm in my 60s now, but right, a lot of these people are dead. They're gone. They're not here no more. Why? Because they abused themselves. But they didn't have to do that. You know, if we trained our children up and we didn't allow this to get into the schoolyard, so to speak, We took it out of the schoolyard by making it legal. We don't have that problem anymore, and we can start training people. Now, the people that are stuck on it because they're depressed, because they're whatever it is, they're not happy with their state of mind, and so they have to get out of their state of mind, and they take a drug. They drink alcohol, whatever it is.
And I'll drink that.
We can solve it.
A couple more things. The lady that was on before, I would love to see that interview. And also, I was on a conference call with a talk radio show Sunday with this lady. I've seen her on, her last name is Jackson. She worked for she was actually in the documentary American Freedom to Fascism about the IRS and how she worked for the IRS. And they was doing this thing about if you can find a law for us to pay taxes, and she quit the IRS. Her last name is Jackson. But she told me she broke down IRS publication 6209 to find out that there was a code in there that said that we're actually volunteering to pay taxes and how it's all fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they say we're volunteering to pay the taxes, but I don't volunteer to pay it. And when you don't volunteer to pay it, they come out after you to force you to volunteer to pay it, you know? And so, of course, that's a problem. But look at, you know what? Trump understands the problem. He understands the problem with the Federal Reserve. He understands the problem with the taxes. I've been listening, and some of the things he's been saying, I know he understands these problems. And he wants to make major, major changes in the tax laws and the IRS and of course, the Fed. And the solution, of course, is the Kennedy solution, moving over to silver certificates, killing the bank, getting rid of the bank. The IRS, the IRS could have a place. First of all, you got to make it a real, agency within our country, and that's of course a problem. But if we were to exercise that and put it in its place in commercial. Which we really don't need to do anyway, because all the laws and all the power we've given Congress to deal with commercial activities, all the necessary taxes and everything, they've already got a control on that. So the IRS really isn't needed much for anything. There may be something you might be able to find worthy of it and make it proper and make it a proper agency. But I'm not aware of anything particular that could be done there and what would be lawful there. But clearly, they'd have no authority over we the people to touch our monies and take our salaries and our hard-earned earnings.
Well, Gaddafi tried that with the gold mint, and they pretty much killed him.
That's probably why he died, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, that's why they killed Kennedy. But, you know, this president is insulated extremely well. Thankfully, at least that's what military intelligence is telling us. And so, therefore, he's going to make some huge changes there. He's got to make changes there. You can't have a Gestapo government. You can't have a government coming out, pushing these things on you, getting involved in your business and taking your money and putting you in debtor's prison if you don't pay, you know? So,
well, some of the stuff I've been listening to Trump say, some stuff he's, I'm like, because I went to business school, and I'm like, you know, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
But then some stuff I'd be like, what is this guy talking about, man?
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't found too many
problems. I think he knows what's really going on, but I don't think he wants to really say. But Hillary cousin? Him and Hillary Clinton are cousins.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
He's not connected.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not aware
is.
Of that.
But more
you'll have to send me that information. Remember, there's a lot of people out there with a lot of BS. I'm getting really tired of YouTube, I'll tell you that, because I get all of YouTube stuff. I get all of this YouTube stuff in my when I go into my private place to, you know where I got all my subscriptions and stuff, and I go in to see what's new and stuff, and I get all this junk, and all of these people, they put these labels that you say, I got to go watch this. It has nothing to do with what they're saying, okay? And I also know that there's a lot of, false information in order to confuse people. Okay, look, Q took a break for what? I think it was 2 weeks or close to 2 weeks. He took a break, and look at the havoc that took place during that time period, all the BS that came out. And now the people that are doing a real good job on that, they laid the whole thing out after, and Q corrected it when Q came back on some of these problems, and they laid it right out. You know, this thing with JFK, this thing with R, whoever R is, I don't know, which I think they thought was JFK Jr., okay? You know, all of this was just, Q had nothing to do with any of that stuff, okay?
Right.
It's not real. It's false. So we're going to get a lot of false information, but I'll tell you what, if you really, anybody who really wants to really know who Trump is, anybody who really wants to know who he is, go to YouTube, put in Trump, and you'll get him going all the way back into the 1980s, okay? And he's saying the same thing in 1980s as he's saying today. And there's a lot of interviews with him. And you listen to those interviews, it's very uplifting because it really builds your faith in the man. It really does. This guy has been pushing this stuff for a long time, and he said, look, I don't want to become president. You know, I got other things to do, but I know there's qualified people out there. They need to get up, and this is what they need to do, and this is what you need to do, that, and this. He laid it all out numerous times, you know. So he's got it. I have a lot of faith in him. And look, I've had faith in him from day one because I come from New York City. I know Trump. I don't know him personally, of course, but I know of Trump. I heard of Trump. I've seen him I used to watch some of these programs. I've seen his interviews. I see him on the news. I see him talking. I've agreed with him. He's a hard ass. There's no doubt about it, to doing business, okay? But he wants to make America. I believe him. I'm totally sold to Trump.
Well, he needs to start getting rid of a lot of these criminals that's been running the show.
Well, he's working on it. The storm is coming, and Q keeps telling us the storm is coming. Some people think it's going to be August, so hold on to your seats, because when it comes, there's going to be a short little blackout for a while. I don't think, because they're going to hit back with everything they got.
They're trying to get them out of there.
But they're not going to accomplish that. His position, he's got, look, he's got the U.S. military behind him. He's got U.S. intelligence, military intelligence. Military intelligence has all the intelligence. Okay?
I know.
So whatever the CIA got, they got. Whatever the Homeland Security got, they got. And they got more, okay? They have nothing on these people, okay? We're in great shape. We're going to take him down. I never thought I'd see anything like this. It's like a miracle, you know, really. It's a dream come true. It really is. I mean, I just never thought we could accomplish this. But when I saw Trump running for president, I knew the possibility was there then, you know. So,
predicted it.
We're beyond our time period here, so there's a lot of people
yes,
in the queue. Didn't have time.
I want to say
them.
This right here before you leave.
Yeah.
For you to be self-taught, I think you're a very brilliant guy. So there it is.
Well,
I stand.
Well, anybody can do this. You just have to believe in yourself and learn the secret. The secret is understand anything you think, do, or see, or say. You know, you just understand it. Forget about remembering anything. Okay. When I used
feel
to try
smart.
To remember things, I didn't get anywhere. But anyway, when I discovered that was it.
John.
Yep.
South Dakota Stephanie's on again this week and still didn't get on. She was looking for information on the committee woman.
I'll send you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Felicia. Okay, yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we do have committee information. Why don't we have a conversation? Maybe she can get a hold of you during the week here, and you can catch me, and we can have a conversation about it.
Okay.
Is that good? Okay.
I don't know.
Is that good? Well, let's unmute Stephanie and see. Let me see. Go ahead, Stephanie. Will that work
for
you?
Yeah, that works good. And then I talked to Brent Allen Winters for a long time. About it as well. He has great input, because just like the militia committee women committing are supposed to be committee man, not committee woman. So there's some biblical.
Well, remember this. Look, let's go back to the basics, to the simplicity. Women are part of mankind, and when you use the idea of man as a general, it includes women. And the word, you know, a woman is a man with a womb, so to speak, part of mankind. We are all mankind, but you have the female and you have the male. And so you have the womb men and you got the men, two different sexes. But people get very disturbed by that. You know, this is the problem that, you know, the political correctness has brought upon us. When I was younger, this was not a problem, okay? I don't recall these issues being a problem. I was born, you know, in 52, so I was growing up in the 50s and the 60s, and, you know, it was the 60s revolution that kind of started and suggested problems that really didn't exist, you know, in my opinion anyway. I didn't know that at the time. I just look back and see it that way. But that's all part of the problems of creating the problems with taking place with the hippie movement and all that stuff, you know, and, you know, free drugs, rock and roll, and whatever, you know, destruction, and
right.
So on. Okay, so get a hold of, well, Jan, and you get a hold of Jan when you have a chance, and he can usually hunt me down, and if I'm close to the computer at the time, or I might say, hey, I'll be in front of my computer in a half hour or whatever, and we'll get together and talk this week, all right?
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. God bless you.
All right, you too. Okay, we're going to end our program now. Thanks, everyone, for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. But again, please, everybody, get involved, okay? Everybody give up that bagel and coffee once a month. That's all you got to do. Give it up and give us the $5. Everybody, if you haven't given money towards the, you know, towards what we've been doing here for the lawsuit against the judiciary and others, and we're moving now into the sheriff's handbook project, please give us $50 a month if you can afford it. And for those who can't afford $50, $5, $10, $25, whatever you can afford. But let's get the money. We need, as we laid out earlier, and if anybody came in late, you can go back and listen to the tape. And, you know, we've showed and laid out how much money we're going to need and what it would be used for and what the cost factors are. So we're looking that we're going to be needing about $55,000 to really do this sheriff program. Okay. Anyway, thanks everyone for coming, and Lord willing, see you next week.
Thank you.